Good morning, everyone. Thank you for making the trip and being here. Beautiful day in Eureka. This meeting is being webcasted and recorded, so all participants, please speak clearly. Members of the public who wish to observe or to address the board may join the meeting at the notice physical location or may use the Zoom application to address the board from a remote location. For people who only want to listen or watch the meeting, the board's customary webcast is available at www.cal-span.org. In addition, we're receiving presentations and public comment through a Zoom meeting platform. If you intend to present or comment or think you might be interested in commenting, you should already be in the Zoom meeting room using the meeting ID and password you received from the clerk. If you've not already received the meeting ID and the password, you can go to our website at www.waterboards.ca.gov/North Coast. Click on the August 14th, 16, 2024 board meeting button and follow the instructions to complete the virtual speaker card. You will then receive an email from the clerk with the Zoom login information. For anyone here in the meeting room that wishes to address the board, please complete a speaker card available on the tables outside the boardroom and give it to the clerk. For those in the meeting, in the Zoom meeting, your camera will be turned off and you will be on mute until it is your turn to speak. The clerk will unmute you when it is your turn to address the board, and you can turn your camera on. We will call each commenter by name and then unmute each commenter. I would also like to ask those who have provided a contact name to please state your name for the record before you speak. There's a normal 5-minute time limit for each commenter. During the public testimony, you will see a timer on the screen. For those calling in by phone, we will run the timer and let you know when you have 30 seconds left and when your time is up. Please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are called upon during public comment. When you are done speaking and the board members have completed asking questions, please turn your camera off and you will be placed on mute. You can remain in the Zoom meeting until the completion of your item and then may choose to exit the meeting or continue. And we'll move on to the Pledge of Allegiance. Ryan?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. All right, roll call and introductions. Start from my right, Mr. McKenzie.
Yeah, good morning. It's grand to be up here in Eureka in the northern part of our region. Jake McKenzie from the city, from Runner Park.
Good morning, everybody. It's great to be up here. I'm just sad I couldn't make it for the tour yesterday. I had other obligations, but I'm excited to be here. I'm Alex Hart from Siskiyou County, cattle rancher and real estate appraiser. Thank you.
Hello, Hector Bedoya from the town of Healdsburg, Sonoma County. Pleasure to be here as well. And I did certainly enjoy the tour of the salt marsh yesterday. It's such an incredible resource for migrating birds. And so retired agronomist, viticulturist.
Greg Giusti, Ukiah, just happy to be out of the heat. Pleasure to wake up this morning and see the fog. Always a pleasure to come up here.
If you don't like the heat, you came to the right place. So my name's Ryan Sundberg from Trinidad, and been on the board since December. And actually, I'd never been on the tour before, and seen the Marsh Interpretive Center. So it was neat to see and get all the history and all the facts that the tour guide had for us. He was really great. So thank you.
Valerie, could you introduce the staff, please?
Yes, good morning, Chair Bedoya and members of the board. I'm Valerie Quinto, Executive Officer. To my left is Joshua Curtis, Assistant Executive Officer. To my right, Bailey Toff Dupuis, Counsel to the Board. Across from us is Nathan Jacobson, also Counsel to the Board. Claudia Villacorta, Assistant Executive Officer, and Deidre Wilkerson, Executive Assistant. And other staff will introduce themselves when their items come up. Thank you.
Thank you. Board member reports. Are there any board members who wish to present any meetings, any information? Okay, board chair's report. Not much of a report, but first I want to thank all of you who traveled great distances to attend and those who are attending virtually. Your interest, presence, comments, and desire to make a difference is what brings us all together. The issues and topics we will cover have brought us together to represent the people and the safeguarding and protection of resources in our great region. Through patient and well-thought-out dialogue, cooperation, and careful gathering of accurate data, we do our best to uphold the nation's Clean Water Act and the state's Porter-Cologne Water Quality Act. And I'd like to read portion of this general statement. The primary duty of the Regional Water Board is to protect the quality of waters within the region for all beneficial uses. This duty is implemented by formulating and adopting water quality plans, specific ground and surface water basins, and by prescribing and enforcing requirements on all domestic and industrial waste discharges. Responsibilities and procedures of the Regional Water Quality Control Board come from the state's Porter-Cologne Water Quality Act and the nation's Clean Water Act. Okay, we move to uncontested items.
Approval of minutes.
Oh, yes.
Please.
So I will entertain the approval of minutes, meeting minutes from June 13th and 14th, 2024.
I move to approve the minutes from our June 2024 meeting.
I'll second that.
Deidre, would you call the vote?
Chair Bedoya?
Aye.
Vice Chair Giusti?
Aye.
Board Member Hart?
Aye.
Board Member Sundberg?
Aye.
Board Member McKenzie?
Aye.
Thank you. Next on the agenda is item number 3, public hearing on order number R1-2024-0016 to consider the adoption of proposed water discharge requirements and water recycling permit for the City of Ukiah Wastewater Treatment Plant. WDID number 1B840290MEN, NPDS number CA0022888. This was scheduled as an uncontested item. If there are no comments from the city, public, board members, or staff, I will proceed directly to a vote. Is there anyone here that wishes to present or comment? Then we'll proceed to a vote. Deidre? Oh, excuse me.
Call for the vote?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I call for a vote on R1-2024. Double odd 16, renewing the permit for the City of Ukiah Wastewater Treatment Plant.
I'll second that motion.
Chair Bedoya?
Aye.
Vice Chair Giusti?
Aye.
Board Member Hart?
Aye.
Board Member Sundberg?
Aye.
Board Member McKenzie?
Aye.
Thank you. Well, I'm jumping all over the place. Must be the 3 cups of coffee I had.
I look a little jittery.
Okay. Moving on to action items. Item number 4. This is the time and place for a hearing to consider adoption of the proposed order number R1-2024-0012, waste discharge requirements for federal lands in the North Coast region, and proposed resolution number R1-2024-0032, certification of environmental impact report for proposed order. These items have been properly noticed and will be conducted in accordance with the notice of public hearing and the procedures published with the agenda. Will all those who expect to testify please stand, raise your right hand, and take the following oath? Do you swear or affirm that you will tell the truth on these matters? Thank you. These items will begin with the staff presentation that is expected to last 40 minutes. Other presentation time limits based on pre-hearing requests are as follows. Bill Wall with the Forest Service, 10 minutes. Tom Wheeler with the Environmental Protection Information Center, 10 minutes. Vivian Helliwell with Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Association, 10 minutes. Other federal agencies and interested persons, 5 minutes. Following the close of the hearing board deliberations, the board will first consider resolution number R1-2024-0032, certification of environmental impact report, and then consider adoption of order number R1-2024-0012, waste discharge requirements for federal lands in the North Coast region. We will now begin with the staff presentation.
Board Chair, if I may, just at the outset here, and for the benefit of the full board, we did receive a couple late comments, written comments yesterday outside of the notice written comment period, and the board chair did rule not to admit those comments. However, those commenters had the opportunity to provide those comments during their oral presentation.
Yes.
And staff has communicated that to the commenters.
Thank you. Let the presentation begin. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Good morning, Chair Bedoya and members of the board. My name is Carly Dunleavy, engineering geologist of your staff. Today we are here for a public hearing to consider adoption of both proposed order number R1-2024-0012, general waste discharge requirements for non-point source discharges related to certain land management activities on federal lands in the North Coast region, and the proposed resolution number R1-2024-0032, certification of the environmental impact report. Throughout the presentation, we will refer to these as the proposed order or permit and EIR. During this item, I will be presenting information about our agency's federal lands permitting background, as well as an overview of the proposed permit. Afterwards, Jonathan Warmerdam will present to you regarding public engagement and staff recommendations. First, I will discuss the federal lands permitting background. Federal lands are a significant part of the North Coast, comprising 46% of the total region. The permit focuses on three primary agencies that manage the most federal lands in the region, which are the United States Forest Service, Bureau of Land Management, and National Park Service. These agencies are depicted in the map to the right here. U.S. Forest Service in green, Bureau of Land Management in yellow, and National Park Service in blue. The U.S. Forest Service manages 88.5% of federal lands in our region, while the Bureau of Land Management manages 7% and the National Park Service manages 2.5%. There are several other agencies, federal agencies, that cumulatively manage 2% of federal lands in the region, including the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Bureau of Reclamation, Army Corps of Engineers, and the U.S. Coast Guard. These agencies do not often conduct permit-eligible activities, so as such, they are not the focus of this permit. They can, however, enroll in the permit when they conduct eligible projects, and only certain conditions will apply. Each of the three primary federal agencies are comprised of several administrative units, which the permit defines as individual Forest Service National Forests, Bureau of Land Management Field Offices, and National Park Service National Parks or Monuments. And they are listed here on the slide. We began regulating forest activities on federal lands in 2004 after the State Water Resources Control Board adopted the policy for implementation and enforcement of the Non-Point Source Pollution Control Program, or the Non-Point Source Policy. The Non-Point Source Policy requires non-point source discharges in California to be permitted through waste discharge requirements, waiver of waste discharge requirements, or discharge prohibitions. The North Coast Water Board's first federal lands permit was a waiver of waste discharge requirements, and it was adopted in 2004. It only covered timber harvest activities on U.S. Forest Service lands. The second iteration was adopted in 2010 and was expanded to cover other non-point source activities, including grazing on United States Forest Service lands. The third iteration, adopted in 2015, covers all federal agencies. However, the monitoring and reporting program associated with this version only applies to the United States Forest Service. In 2020, a renewal of the 2015 waiver was adopted to provide regional water board staff with additional time to develop the next iteration of the permit. The 2020 waiver is the active regulatory order, and it retains the same conditions as the 2015 waiver. And finally, we have the proposed federal lands permit that we are here to discuss today, which we have converted to a waste discharge requirements permit that, unlike waivers, will not expire every 5 years. However, the permit may be reopened at any point if the North Coast Water Board sees fit. Our team has been working on tasks supporting the development of the proposed permit since 2019. We conducted project planning and initial engagement in 2019 and 2020. In July of 2022, we sent consultation invitations to 64 California Native American tribes in the North Coast region, and we consulted with six of those tribes. In September of 2022, we held several public meetings during the 30-day scoping period to solicit input from interested parties on the scope of our draft environmental impact report. We developed the draft permit and environmental impact report from November 2022 to February of 2024. During this period, we issued an administrative draft of the permit to federal agencies and tribes to solicit their high-level comments on specific topics on this permit. Between March and May of this year, we initiated a public review period for the draft order and EIR and held a public workshop in April of 2024. Since the end of the public review period, staff responded to public comments, revised the draft order, its attachments, and the environmental impact report for your adoption consideration today. Now I will give you an overview of the proposed permit. Next, the permit covers two categories of activities. Category A activities, which we consider to have a low risk to water quality, such as road maintenance, culvert cleaning, surface grading, or vegetation management conducted by hand crews outside of the riparian areas. One revision we made in response to the public comment period was to transition cultural burning, pile burning, and understory burning from a category A to or category B to a category A activity. Category B activities, which we consider to have a moderate risk to water quality, such as most commercial timber harvest, livestock grazing, road construction activities, and non-emergency restoration or rehabilitation of burned areas. Another carryover from the federal waiver is that emergency activities, such as those necessary actions that must be taken to protect life, property, and resources during an emergency, are automatically authorized. We engage with federal agencies during the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, process, and we review scoping documents and draft NEPA analysis and provide comments during that period to agencies. Projects are approved by the federal agency and enrolled under our permit, at which point covered projects are subject to the conditions and requirements of the order. If a federal project contains only low-risk activities, it is considered a Category A project and is automatically enrolled. Category A projects must meet federal BMPs and guidance. For Category B projects, administrative units must submit a notice of intent, which is Attachment D of the order, to the North Coast Water Board to request enrollment. A notice of termination, which is Attachment E of the order, to request termination once activities are complete and comply with monitoring and reporting requirements in the MRP. One of the new components of the proposed order is the Watershed Assessment and Recovery Program, or WARP. The WARP is designed to ensure steady treatment of CSDS over time. It is based on a credit system developed for each administrative unit, tailored to their specific water quality conditions and land management activity on their respective lands. I will explain more about the crediting system on the next slide. It also provides some compliance flexibility that accounts for other projects that benefit water quality and align with federal land management objectives. As I mentioned, the WARP relies on a credit system that assigns annual treatment obligations to each of the administrative units. The credit system is based on an assessment that staff created that considers several factors within administrative units, HUC 12 or six field watershed, including Clean Water Act, Section 303D list impairments, status of past and present management activities, and wilderness or roadless area designations. For more information on the assessment and annual treatment obligation calculation process, please refer to Attachment F in the order. We anticipate the annual treatment obligations will change over time as watersheds are added or removed from the Clean Water Act Section 303D list, changes in grazing management occurs, and or treatments are completed in watersheds. Now I'm going to discuss how federal agencies comply with the WARP and complete their annual treatment obligations. The WARP requires at least 70% of each administrative unit's annual credit obligations to come from CSDS treatments, which are listed here on the slide as primary creditable activities. These treatments could include road surface treatments, water course crossing treatments, storm proofing of roads, and road decommissioning. The WARB also includes a set of alternative credit generating activities that administrative units can implement to help their annual obligations. These alternative credits cannot exceed 30% of an administrative unit's total annual credit obligation. These activities include fuels, treatments, aquatic habitat restoration projects, and additional monitoring on grazing allotments. And certain activities such as restoration can account for that 30%, while other activities such as fuels treatments can account for up to 10% of an annual obligation. So for example, if an administrative unit has an annual obligation of 10 credits, 7 of those credits must come from CSDS treatments, but then the remaining 3 could come from a combination of these alternative generating credits listed here, adhering to their respective caps. Additionally, the WARP also includes 2 credit multipliers for eligible activities, one to promote federal agencies in conducting prioritized watershed planning efforts, and another to incentivize racial equity and environmental justice efforts. Prioritized watershed-based planning and implementation efforts are eligible for a credit multiplier of 1.5. Projects that involve collaboration with tribes or other communities of color consistent with our racial equity initiative will qualify for a credit multiplier of 2. More information on credible activities and credit multipliers can be found in attachment F of the proposed order. The WARP tracking form can be found in attachment C2 of the order. The form contains several tabs, including instructions, a template, and a sample of an annual obligation calculation. Please note, we submitted a change sheet to attachment C2 to clarify aspects of the table and how credits will be accounted for, but nothing substantive. Jonathan will touch on that during his presentation. Federal livestock grazing allotments cover hundreds of thousands of acres across the North Coast region and span many ecological settings. The proposed order takes a new regulatory approach to livestock grazing by covering the activity of grazing instead of projects. In other words, it transitions away from enrolling grazing permits on a renewal of NEPA basis and instead automatically extends regulatory coverage to the activity of grazing. This new approach intends to improve water quality on federally grazed lands through continuing to require adherence to federal guidance, new grazing-specific order conditions, reviewing permit administration processes and documents, such as annual operating instructions, and increased staff inspections. Moving on to the Monitoring and Reporting Program, or MRP. It now applies to all of the federal agencies. Where appropriate, we developed this proposed order to leverage existing federal monitoring and reporting activities. The MRP continues to require federal agencies to implement in-channel water quality monitoring programs, livestock grazing monitoring, and roads and trails monitoring. Reporting is required at different intervals, such as ongoing, annual, or every 5 years, and includes specific requirements for the WARP, livestock grazing, and discharge notifications. Now I will speak to the environmental impact report developed to support the permit. A draft EIR was developed for the proposed permit and circulated for comment during the public review period. The EIR analyzes potential impacts from implementing the proposed order, including implementation of management measures. Proposed resolution number R1-2024-0032 contains CEQA findings and proposes the certification of the final environmental impact report. Existing federal guidance contains measures that result in impacts being less than significant, with limited additional mitigation measures contained in the mitigation monitoring and reporting program. This week, staff made two minor non-substantive changes to the order package that I will describe for you now. First, we found a minor mistake in the warp tracking spreadsheet, attachment C2, and fixed an error in the example calculation. After fixing the error, we also made minor adjustments to the tracking spreadsheet to make it easier to interpret and modified the instructions. Second, we included a new order finding, C4, which states, other regional water quality control boards have existing or are currently developing similar regulatory programs for federal land management activities. The North Coast Water Board commits to ongoing coordination with the State Water Board, other regional water boards, and the federal agencies to assess whether there could be improvements in efficiency and consistency by developing statewide standards for management of discharges from activities on federal lands while recognizing regional differences. And with that, I will pass it over to Jonathan Warberdam.
Good morning, Chair Bedoya and members of the board. My name is Jonathan Warmerdam. I'm an environmental program manager for your non-point source and surface water protection division. As Carly just stated, today is the culmination of several years of work that led us up to presenting this fourth iteration of a federal lands permit for your consideration of adoption. I wanted to just show you on one slide the number of public engagements we have done over the years since we kicked off the development of this permit. What you see here is most of the different meetings, outreach, information items, public hearings, CEQA scoping, consultations, and distribution of information that we've done. Although this isn't the focus of the day, it provides a glimpse of the engagement we have done that has led up to this point. Now I will turn to the public comments and staff responses we received. Staff received 30 different comment letters that included 296 individual comments, which span a range of different categories. Our response to those comments is captured in the 100-page document before you now. We received comments that we organized into 14 different categories. But instead of digging in on each of these categories, I'm going to focus on five primary themes which straddle many of the different categories and will highlight some of the changes that we incorporated into the permit. These include the Water Board's authority, federal agency resource limitations, forest, fires, and fuels management, the watershed assessment and recovery program, and livestock grazing. At the end of this presentation, Forrest Fortescue and Devin Rebellino will join Carly and I so that our entire federal lands permit team can be available to answer any questions you may have. I want to first start by speaking briefly about the Water Board's state and federal regulatory authorities and responsibilities because they set the stage for why we have a regulatory program on federal lands. Sometimes people ask me, why is it that the state regulates federal agencies? And the short answer is it's because it's the law. As you know, the water boards are designated as the state's primary water pollution control agency. We administer the laws included in the Porter-Cologne Water Quality Control Act and our basin plan, as well as various statewide and regional board policies. But the boards are also authorized to implement aspects of the Federal Clean Water Act. Section 319 of the Clean Water Act required California to develop a non-point source pollution management program and to make that program available for review and approval by the United States EPA. California's non-point source program and policy was adopted in 2004. Under the state's non-point source policy, the water boards are responsible for addressing this type of pollution through one of three regulatory approaches: waste discharge requirements, waivers of waste discharge requirements, or prohibitions. The water boards are also provided additional regulatory responsibilities to address water bodies that are impaired under Clean Water Act Section 303D. These impairment listings are what has led us to develop numerous total maximum daily loads, or TMDLs, to protect and restore the water bodies that are impaired. Finally, Clean Water Act Section 313 requires federal agencies to comply with all state requirements respecting the control and abatement of water pollution. This is referred to as the waiver of sovereign immunity, and it requires federal agencies to comply with state water quality requirements to the same extent as non-governmental agencies, actors. We use these collective state and federal authorities to regulate non-point source discharges of waste on both private and federal lands. And that is why we are here today, presenting to you our regulatory program to protect and restore the waters of the North Coast region. We understand that the responsibility bestowed upon our federal partners are significant, especially with onset of larger and more severe wildfires, a rapidly changing climate regime, and the vast landscapes that they oversee. And we have heard from our federal partners, tribes, and environmental organizations that the federal agencies are not provided enough staffing and funding resources to sufficiently manage these federal landscapes, nor to comply with some of the requirements of this order. I'm raising this theme now as I would like to share how we approached development of several aspects of our regulatory program with that in mind. We received feedback from the federal agencies that the monitoring and reporting requirements in the order could be burdensome to comply with. Whenever possible, we incorporated requirements in the permit that align with the monitoring and reporting activities that the federal agencies are already doing. We are requiring them to present the results of routine monitoring and reporting information to us in annual and five-year reports. We include a requirement for the federal agencies to submit their routine contract documents that include project-specific design features and associated management measures so that we can simply verify what is being done on the ground. In regard to in-channel water quality monitoring requirements, we modified our order to require the federal agencies to continue implementing existing programs, such as the Aquatic and Riparian Effectiveness Monitoring Program, or AREMP, which has been underway on U.S. Forest Service and BLM lands for over 20 years. And we are requiring the continued collection of temperature monitoring data by those agencies that have been collecting this information for years. Regarding livestock grazing, we may hear from the public that the federal agencies lack the staffing and resources to sufficiently regulate this activity, or that they do not enforce their own standards, or ensure that the annual operating instructions are being adhered to. As previously discussed, our staff intend to take an active role in overseeing livestock grazing now that our regulatory program will more comprehensively cover the activity. Regarding compliance with the Watershed Assessment and Recovery Program, as you will recall, many watersheds in the North Coast region are identified as impaired due to excess sediment. Discharges of sediment from roads and watercourse crossings remain the largest source of controllable anthropogenic sediment discharges on federal lands. We believe the WARP establishes a reasonable process for the treatment of controllable sediment discharge sources over time. We also believe that staff from these federal agencies should be sufficiently resourced to manage their responsibilities, and that resource limitations should not be the reason to allow for controllable water quality impacts to occur, nor for persistent watershed impairments to remain. However, by building the federal lands permit in a way that leans in on federal standards and routine operations, we are maximizing regulatory efficiencies while also maintaining our own state and federal responsibilities. Our permit also establishes regulatory expectations for federal lands that are similar to those that we require on private lands. I want to now pivot briefly to talk about what is at stake, because it really provides some additional context for the reasons we have these requirements for federal lands. The future of aquatic resources in California are at risk. We have a lot on the line in the North Coast, not only for the region, but also for the entire state. The watersheds of the North Coast have some of the most sensitive beneficial uses in California, including 15 out of the remaining 31 distinct populations of native salmon, trout, and steelhead populations. Several recent publications by the UC Davis Center for Watershed Sciences and Caltrout identified the status and threats that face these species from a range of different stressors. But forecasts for a hotter, drier, and more extreme future are only making these resources more vulnerable. A couple takeaways from these reports and the effects of climate change are alarming. If current trends continue, more than half of California's anadromous species and a third of its inland species are likely to be extinct within the next 50 years. And within 100 years, it is likely that 3/4 of California's remaining 31 species of native salmon, steelhead, and trout are likely to be extinct. The concept is alarming, sobering, and is why we believe it is so important for us to continue to implement these actions. If we are going to protect and restore the watersheds of the North Coast region, then we need an approach where we see steady advancement of pollution controls, aquatic habitat restoration, and continued management of forests to prevent catastrophic wildfire impacts. Our staff recognize the increasing size and severity of catastrophic wildfires within the region and across the state. The impacts from high severity fires on federal landscapes can be profound, and the weight of responsibility placed on our federal partners is enormous. Unfortunately, these events are becoming more common, and they are greatly impacting our communities, forests, and watersheds. The water boards and the federal agencies are part of the California Wildfire and Forest Resilience Task Force, which was formed in 2018 by former Governor Jerry Brown and carried forward by Governor Gavin Newsom. Together with the federal government, the state has set the ambitious goal of conducting 1 million acres of fuel treatment per year beginning in 2025. We continue to participate in the governor's task force and embrace the goals and actionable items in the Wildfire and Forest Resilience Action Plan to increase the pace and scale of fuels management across the state. Over the years, we have requested and received valuable input from federal agencies regarding how aspects of our regulatory program could be improved to better facilitate fuels management projects or afford better environmental and water quality protections. We also received valuable input from our tribal partners over the years, including recommendations from the Karuk Tribe and Quartz Valley Indian Reservation to better support prescribed cultural burning techniques conducted on federal lands. And we have received input from environmental organizations seeking clarification on how the federal lands permit contemplates beneficial fuels management practices in the watershed assessment and recovery program to facilitate protections for old growth forests within late successional reserves. Based on this input, we intentionally designed and further improved regulatory efficiencies in our federal lands permit to avoid getting in the way of fuels treatment projects that build forest resilience and protect communities as well as old growth forests. Some of the changes we made include, we made cultural burning, understory burning, and pile burning a Category A project activity. These activities will be automatically enrolled under the permit and do not include subsequent monitoring and reporting. And we articulated in the Watershed Assessment and Recovery Program that salvage harvest activities in late successional reserves do not garner credit obligations. Our team also developed the Watershed Assessment and Recovery Program, or WARP, to better facilitate the steady treatment of controllable sediment discharge sources over time. By decoupling CSDS treatment obligations from Category B projects, and instead focusing those treatments into the WARP, we believe the federal agencies will be more effective at implementing important fuels management and community protection projects. We received a number of divergent public comments regarding the WARP from the federal agencies, tribes, and environmental organizations. Amongst the range of comments from the federal agencies, some noted the challenges they face in securing funding from the U.S. Congress to address controllable sediment discharge sources. One of the National Forests expressed concerns regarding whether previously completed work would be accounted for in the new permit, and we received suggestions regarding potential modification to the values of the different credit-generating activities. We also received other federal agency responses that express support for the innovative aspects of the WARP that complement existing federal land management activities. Environmental organizations such as the Environmental Protection Information Center, the Salmon River Restoration Council, and American Whitewater all express concerns about the existing environmental conditions on federal lands, the lack of CSDS treatments being conducted, the backlog of CSDS sites, and the Regional Water Board's ability to enforce the WARP. Additionally, we received several comments raising concerns about allowing alternative credit generating activities that are part of a federal agency's normal operation, or that could be used to take advantage of credit generating activities, or that could have detrimental effects on the environment. As previously stated, we believe the WARP provides an efficient process under which federal agencies will address CSDS over time. By tailoring the credit obligations to fit the individual administrative units, we believe we have developed a program that will support the steady treatment of pollution sources while allowing for alternative credit generating opportunities that also provide tangible benefits to water quality. We are also proactively engaging with the federal agencies to identify grant funding opportunities and other resources to provide support. Our staff intend to work closely with the federal agencies as they implement projects. We will be working and reviewing annual WARP tracking forms, conducting inspections, and following up with any necessary compliance measures. As stated in the federal lands permit, non-compliance with the WARP requirements may result in a notice of violation, site-specific cleanup and abatement order, time schedule order pursuant to Water Code Section 13308, and or additional progressive enforcement actions. Excuse me. A couple changes we did make regarding the WARP based on public comment. We increased the credits that can be earned for routine CSDS treatment activities associated with watercourse crossing replacements. We also increased the credit multiplier for prioritized watershed planning efforts. And we created the new credit multiplier for federal projects conducted in partnerships with tribes. Our vision here was to incentivize federal agencies to partner or continue to partner with tribes on activities conducted on their ancestral homelands, such as prescribed cultural burning activities, projects that incorporate tribal ecological knowledge, and other types of forest or watershed restoration. Projects that are developed and implemented in partnership with tribes aligns with the environmental justice goals of our racial equity initiative. The activity of livestock grazing on federal lands remains a significant concern shared by many of the commenters on the federal lands permit, including the Karuk Tribe and Quartz Valley Indian Reservation and environmental organizations such as the Central Sierra Environmental Resource Center, Salmon River Restoration Council, and Conservation Congress. Our agency shares in those concerns, as livestock grazing on federal lands has always been a difficult activity to regulate. We received numerous comments regarding inadequate regulatory oversight by the federal government, insufficient staffing to implement federal standards, failures to enforce annual operating instructions, and impacts to water quality due to undermanaged grazing and untimely rotation of cattle on and off federal lands. We also heard criticism for the federal grazing standards that apply to the federal agencies, primarily because of a declared lack of enforcement. We've also been informed of and have periodically observed bank trampling impacts, degradation of surface waters, wetlands, and meadows, and unmanaged cattle impacting water quality through erosion and discharges of animal wastes including at areas that are commonly used by the public for swimming and recreating. We also received input from the Mendocino County Farm Bureau and federal agencies about our regulatory approach to grazing and how it does or does not align with federal land management standards and performance metrics. As previously mentioned, our proposed federal lands permit includes a new approach to livestock grazing compared to our previous permits by automatically covering the activity of grazing. The order proposes to regulate the federal agencies, not the grazing permittees, and would require the federal agencies to adhere to their own regulatory requirements and standards for water quality protection. We believe those standards are good if fully implemented. Additionally, we incorporated several management measures that our office has incorporated into other existing regulatory permits for livestock grazing on private lands. And we are committing to increase our own inspections and monitoring to determine whether federal agencies are managing allotments in a manner consistent with their own standards as well as our own. As stated in the proposed federal lands permit, failure to meet these requirements may result in notices of violation and or additional progressive enforcement actions, including site-specific cleanup and abatement measures, monitoring or reporting requirements, or a time schedule order pursuant to Water Code Section 13308. We did not make any substantive changes to our approach with livestock grazing based on public comments that we received. The federal lands of Northern California form a mosaic of landscapes that support a wealth of natural resources, native flora and fauna, diverse ecosystems, and beneficial uses of water. The responsibilities bestowed upon the federal land management agencies are significant and necessitate sufficient resources and staffing to manage. The individuals shouldering that weight should be commended for their dedication and care to these landscapes. Working together, federal agencies and the North Coast Water Board share responsibilities under state and federal laws to protect and restore the quality and availability of clean water for people and the environment. The goals of our proposed federal lands permit are really pretty straightforward. We created the permit to embrace existing management practices that have been developed by the federal agencies, like those in the U.S. Forest Service's Northwest Forest Plan and the Bureau of Land Management's Best Management Practices for California Guidelines. We designed the permit to streamline authorizations for beneficial fuels management, prescribed burns, and community protection projects. We require the federal agencies to monitor and report on the activities that they are implementing and to provide us with routine information that supports their ongoing management and oversight of activities on federal lands. And we automatically cover the activity of livestock grazing, requiring the federal agencies to implement the measures included in their own federal guidance documents and commits our staff to increased auditing and inspections. And we've developed a process under which our agency's state and federal water quality obligations are being met by requiring the steady inventory, planning, and treatment of controllable sediment discharge sources and other forms of pollution over time in a manner more commensurate with how we regulate private lands. We feel that we've created a permit that achieves all of those objectives, and we believe that through adoption of this permit, we will continue to see water quality improvements on federal landscapes over time. With that, our staff recommend that the board consider for adoption proposed order number R1-2024-0012, general waste discharge requirements for federal lands in the North Coast region, and the certification of the associated resolution number R1-2024-0032. Our federal lands permit core team are available to answer any clarifying questions now or following public comments.
Thank you, Jonathan. We will now hear from any federal agencies or interested persons wishing to comment. I think Deidre would call presenters. Josh?
Chair Bedoya, Deidre is closing out the presentation, and then she'll call up people in a moment.
Thank you. Your patience is greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Okay, yes, we have six people on Zoom who would like to comment and a few people in person. And I'm not sure if I received speaker cards for everybody who's in person and wants to comment. So if you wanted to comment on this item, please make sure to get me a speaker card. First up, we have Alicia.
Testing. Okay, great. Good morning, Chair Bedoya, members of the board. My name is Alicia Goldsworthy. I'm the Policy and Communications Manager with Green Diamond Resource Company, and I'm here on behalf of CalForest, the California Forestry Association, of which Green Diamond is a member. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today in place of CalForest President Matt Diaz. He is busy today, called away on other business, maybe online, so I'm just sort of here to fill in for him. CalForest is a trade association whose members own and sustainably manage over 3.5 million acres of forest land in California. In addition, CalForest member companies share over 5,000 acres of ownership boundaries with national forests across central and northern California. CalForest comes before this board today because we are all facing a wildfire crisis, and the rate of loss of forest lands due to high-intensity wildfire is unacceptable. In this time of crisis, private timberland owners are working to support the Forest Service in accomplishing forest health projects for fields reduction as efficiently and quickly as possible. And as such, existing barriers need to be removed and new barriers should not be put in place. Now is the time for water boards to support the state's mandate to cut green tape, to increase the pace and scale of stewardship by amending and streamlining various government processes. And in the spirit of cutting green tape, CalForest respectfully requests that this board consider the following two actions. One is do adopt draft order R1-2024-0012, the GWDR for non-point source discharges related to certain land management activities for a period of 90 days or what this board deems appropriate. And secondly, direct staff of the North Coast Water Board to work with the Forest Management Task Force, other regional boards, industry experts, and State Water Resources Control Board to develop a statewide order covering forest resiliency treatments on federal lands. In 2021, the State Water Resources Control Board adopted statewide water quality order, 2021-0026 for vegetation treatment activities that are within the scope of the CalVTP programmatic EIR. The principal goals of those vegetation treatment order, general order, included maintaining and protecting water quality for potential waste discharges resulting from vegetation treatment activities, supporting implementation of vegetation treatment to reduce wildfire risk in California, and streamlining permitting requirements for certain vegetation treatment activities. This existing statewide approach covers over 20 million acres in California for fields reduction vegetation treatments and can be utilized as a model for consistency across federal lands where similar projects are being pursued. CalForest anticipates that several regional boards will likely take similar actions as the North Coast Board, including the Lahontan Water Board next week. The new information that was presented today is in the spirit of consistency that all the water boards kind of want to be on the same page. So we think that this is an opportunity for the North Coast Water Board to be a leader in the state's initiative to cut green tape, while also ensuring outcomes that protect water resources throughout the state and slow the crisis of forest loss and conversion. I stand before you to ask for consideration on behalf of CalForest outlined actions. While we understand that a 90-day lifetime of an order is not very long, CalForest does suggest that it is enough time for the regional boards to agree on a streamlined approach to programmatic statewide coverage for federal projects intended to reduce impacts from wildfire. Such actions seek to protect communities at risk by increasing pace and scale of fields reduction treatments through a streamlined approach to permitting federal fields reduction projects. Thank you for your time, attention, and leadership.
I'd like to ask a follow-up question if that's allowed in process. Is that allowed of the commenter? Thank you for your comment today. I really appreciate it. I was just wondering if you can expound upon the reasoning behind a 90-day or short time, that short of time of approval, what benefit does that serve?
Yeah, so I think Cal Forest will be fine with 60 days, 90 days. The ask is that we streamline the approach and that the forest districts don't get carved up by different water board districts with different recommendations, right? We want to see a statewide approach. So we would take under your advisement how long that takes to do that. But with Lahontan meeting next week, knowing that this is moving, this is a great example that was presented by Mr. Warmadam today and his team, you know, sort of adopting this model statewide would be more efficient. So we're not hung up on 90 days by any measure.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you for bringing that up. Personally, if I may, I believe that the state could create an outline, a template for regions. We are so unique in having 46% of our lands being federally managed, and we are unique in the number of tribes we have. We're unique in our weather, our geology, our geography, and personally, I believe if the state creates a template that other water, other regions, water board regions can flesh out to create individual federal lands programs, I think that would be the best approach, because all the regions are different. And certainly regions may overlap a forest, but I think that would be the best approach personally. Thank you.
Kimberly?
Good morning. My name is Kimberly Baker. I work with the Klamath Forest Alliance and with EPIC. I have been monitoring nearly every timber sale on the North Coast National Forest for 25 years. So I do come here with some experience in knowing what happens on the ground with timber sales, grazing, wildfires, etc. I thank you for being here today and allowing us to speak. I am here today with two main issues. The first would be accounting fuels treatments for WARP credits. Not all fuels treatments are created equal, and I will get into that. And the other is site-specific accounting for each individual watersheds. The previous waiver allowed for accounting site-specific sediment sources. And this waiver does not necessarily account for keeping track of those sediment sites. So first off, I'm sure you're probably aware of the state that our waters are in. Salmon are hanging on by a thread. You know, in 2015, nearly the entire Klamath River ran brown all the way to the ocean for weeks. The South Fork Salmon River ran brown for weeks, and every pool in the South Fork Salmon River filled up with sediment. The Mad River brown for weeks in 2022. So these, you know, brown rivers are kind of, we're getting a little used to seeing them. So it's imperative that we have a really great water waiver in place. I've been monitoring fire suppression actions and wildfires on our national forest. There were 61 bulldozers working on the Shelley Fire this year. There were 61 bulldozers working on the August complex. Over 600 miles of dozer line went in on the August complex. So every year we're seeing hundreds of miles of ridgetops bulldozed to bare earth. So there are huge impacts from that. But let me just talk about fuels treatments. Not all fuels treatments are created equal. When you take away forest canopy, it increases solar radiation. Wind speeds increase. Fuels conditions, the microclimate dries out. Oftentimes, logging will increase fire severity. And if it's very nuanced, if you take too much canopy and you don't adequately treat all of the fuels and do underburning in a very timely basis and maintain that, you're actually increasing fuels on the ground when you take away forest canopy. Every single timber sale that is coming out on national forest is now considered fuels treatment. It's intense, and I can give you specific examples. Bear Country Project, it would treat 900 acres of riparian reserves and would actually, it's almost worse than the California practice rules when it comes to treatments in riparian reserves, up to 30 feet in perennial streams. They're logging up to 30 feet. And in intermittent, they took it down to 10 to 20 feet. So that's 900 acres in one project alone. The South Fork Sacramento project, and not to mention that they are permanently removing about 500 acres of mature and old growth forest in late successional reserve and in critical habitat. The South Fork Sacramento project would remove over 13,000 acres of habitat for the owl, and that includes over 500 acres.
You have 30 seconds.
Oh, no. All fuels reduction is not created the same. This is what the Forest Service considers fuels reduction project. And you can keep these photographs. This is up on the Smith River National Recreation Area. This is what is being considered fuels reduction. Please take the time you need to make this decision and do not include mechanical logging as fuels reduction. And this is the Little Jones Wild and Scenic River right here. There's a 50-foot buffer. That's what fuels reduction is to the Forest Service. Thank you. I wish I had more time. I could fill you in more on project specifics, but I appreciate your time.
Thank you for your service to the forests.
Thank you.
Deidre, how many speakers do we have?
Question, Mr.
Chair. Yeah, hold on. How many speakers?
We have about 10 speakers left.
Okay. Yes.
Are we going to be hearing from federal agencies?
I believe so. Yes.
Okay. Just wanted to be sure.
Vivian provided some slides she wanted to share. And just a note, I'll be sharing her slides, but I won't be able to share the timer. So that won't be up there while I'm sharing her slides.
These are for the board and staff to look at. Thank you. Thank you, Greg. Nice to see you. Still here. See some new faces. Clearly, I've been here before. Been a little while. Disruptions to the fisheries have limited some of our ability to participate over the last few years. But here we are again. Thank you. National Geographic, 1982, This shows what happens when you get logging industry executives in charge of the timber forest for the whole nation. So Mr. Krall was...
Excuse me? Did you introduce yourself?
I'm so sorry.
Name and who you represent? Thank you.
I'm Vivian Hellowell. I'm with Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations and our nonprofit Institute for Fisheries Resources. And this we have a coastwide trade industry group for commercial fishermen. So we care very much about the salmon resource. Our salmon fishing's been closed for 2 years straight now. This leaves people without the ability to support their businesses, even though they continue to have fixed costs. For example, you can't sell your boat and permit when you have no season, but you still have to maintain it and pay for your mooring and so on and repairs. So the national forests are a great resource for protecting the quality of the rivers for these salmon. We are far from having any kind of recovery. And the coho salmon, for example, are really important to our ocean fishery, even though we haven't been allowed to catch them since the early 90s, because those closed areas to protect coho restrict us from catching king salmon. So our industry is based on bringing food to your table and to your restaurants for local high-quality seafood. And we really need a robust recovery of these salmon species with a harvestable surplus. So I agree with the comments of the woman from the Klamath Alliance about the fuels treatment often takes out a lot of large trees that need to be left. Next. This is a typical logging aerial photograph in Trinidad up here of Louisiana Pacific's logging that the gentleman who was in charge of the entire Forest Service and wanted to log all the old growth and replace them with plantations of the slide you just saw. Go ahead. In the Forest Service, they can use these larger trucks. This is in the Tongass Forest that aren't even allowed on the highway to get the logs out. And when you change the entire landscape, you change the climate. We don't have the fog that we used to have here that the redwood trees would bring. And it creates a hotter, drier climate that leads to more fires. Go ahead. In the past, broadcast burning after clear cuts was the usual way to do it. This reduces everything that's on the landscape, and then it grows up in brush piles. Brush fields, which are then planted with conifer plantations. And then they were sprayed with herbicides that are in kerosene in order to release the conifers that they've planted from the brush. They've gone more to hand clearing, but we're talking about huge areas. Go ahead. Terwar Creek up here on the Klamath. This is a quote from 1975, a picture you see all the dark area is trees. And the lighter areas on the right are upland meadows. And it was exchanged for Redwood National Park. This was a good stream on the reservation. Go ahead. And here's how you show the change seen over time. So 1984. To 1990, those green areas of trees are gone. And Terwar Creek was hosed. It's full of sediment now. Very hard to support fish in that kind of a river. Go ahead. So you can use GIS mapping and satellite mapping to show change seen over time when you can't get on the ground with enough people to do the monitoring. And this shows the layers in a book I'm going to give you later that was developed for the State Water Board on managing erodible areas. go ahead. So that's the same slide. Go ahead. What? Okay. We'll go with that. Seven and a half, one by 24,000 quads is what's used for the aerial mapping and the satellite mapping in the Forest Service. Now, we were here in 2019, and we talked about how in the documents, West Side National Forest, when you had a 6,000-acre timber proposal that you reduced to 3,000 acres for not having the tools to analyze such a large area of timber harvest. And so by using the satellite imagery and aerial photographs and LIDAR, where you can see the roads through the canopy and the old roads, your legacy roads, you can use change seeing over time to help manage these forests and maintain canopy cover, shade these streams. So I really appreciate that you are paying attention to the grazing, because as people have told you, it's been a real problem that needs to be addressed in terms of the bank trampling and nutrients. So I like your approach that you're going to hold the agencies to enforcing their own rules. Now, our group was involved in helping develop the Northwest Forest Plan back in the early 90s, which the handout that you have received or will receive shows how we were talking 30 years ago, we're losing these salmon. And so now we have like so many rivers impacted by fires and different things. And when you start logging up in the lightning zones, see these big companies like LPNGP and Pelco, they cut all the private lands and then they cut on the Forest Service lands and with subsidized roads, which everything is subsidized, but these roads have to be maintained so they don't go in the rivers. And we're talking about huge areas that are challenging to manage on such a large scale. So this satellite imagery was released to the public in the 70s by President Nixon so that we could use it for land management and navigating, which is great. Now, you can get GPS. And you can even get receptors for doing research in the mountains where you have no phone signal. So I really appreciate you going to the effort to apply your authority to protect these streams in the national forest lands that we have such large areas of. The whole original purpose of them was to provide clean water for the state of New York. And now we have multi-use, but these salmon are not recovering yet. So please do what you can. And please watch out for these, enrolling everything as, exempt fire control, because the type of logging that's done often causes more fires by creating brush fields, by logging in the high altitude lightning zones. I think that's all I have for you right now. Thank you. Any questions? I'd be happy
to. Thank you very much for your comment.
Thank you, sir.
Board Chair, just seeking some direction on the written materials that were asked to be distributed to the board. Per the notice, written materials are requested to be submitted during the comment period, so it would be at the board's discretion whether to distribute them and incorporate them at this date.
I'd be interested in seeing them. Valerie, can we take a break? Maybe a 10, 15-minute break?
During that time, maybe we can get calls, whatever you guys are going to submit.
Yeah, let's take a break, 15 minutes. Thank you. State your name and where you're from, please.
Okay. Hi, I'm Bill Wall with the U.S. Forest Service. I'm a...
Get closer.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Technical advisor for the Northern Forest. And what I really want to do is shouldn't take too long, but I want to talk about things that I thought the permit improves. I want to talk about the A-ramp, that monitoring, aquatic riparian effectiveness monitoring. And then I want to thank the staff, your staff for really working with us and working on tough topics with professionalism and really, you know, strong candor. I think one of the big things is the plan that looks more at the landscape level. And I'm going to talk about we have so many acronyms, but it's the Watershed Restoration Action Plans, which really pick watersheds across the forest using the Watershed Condition Framework. That's the national framework, and identifies priorities, partners, cost, and timelines. That sets us up to where we want to go, because there's more work than we can possibly do in setting those priorities to get there the best way in the shortest time. And one of the first discussions we had was the monitoring. Quite frankly, I felt that that monitoring needs to be independent. It needs to be qualified and timely. And I think it's this thing about there's California and there's the rest of the world, or and there's, you know, Region 6 and Region 5. But with the Northwest Forest Plan monitoring assessment, the A-ramp's been going on since 1995, really got started in 97. So there's almost 25 years of monitoring by qualified people out of Oregon State, the Northwest Forest Plan, and the Regional Effectiveness Board. And that is going to help us a lot, because we can everybody can focus on what they do best. And so with that monitoring, I did want to say we do need to be looking at that data. Within the California Northwest Forest, we just picked out those four forests for macroinvertebrates. 10 watersheds show us an increase in trend and observes versus expected. And out of those 41, the rest were stable. So that's a positive trend. The pull-tail crest finds, which is looking at for salmonids for spawning, 34 watersheds were stable, 5 decreased in finds. And then the general transect for finds is 27 watershed decreased in finds and 14 were stable. One of the things they look at wetted width is probably looking more at climate change, what the amount of flow was over time. And 25 watersheds decreased, with 15 becoming stable. Across the Northwest Forest Plan, that's looking at all the forests within there. Canopy cover and stream temperature. Canopy cover slightly increased. So there was increase in canopy cover, and noted that large losses in cover associated with the fires. No major changes in stream temperature, and that's probably due to the increase in canopy cover, which would compensate for increased air temperatures. Forest conditions in the riparian reserve, there was a slight increase in old growth structure index at 80 years from 57% to 61%. It's not a lot, but it is an upward trend. And then in roads, landslides, and sediment delivery, 7% reduction in miles of roads through decommissioning, 4% reduction in sediment delivery, and 11% reduction in landslide risk associated with roads. So I think there is to really look at those data that really is what the Water Board wants to look at, and look at that data, because there's data that I think that's showing that we haven't probably met the excess concerns for the Water Board, but we are in a trend for improvement. And I think the last thing I wanted to say was, so we looked, we took what with the engineers and we said, using that table, and if you wanna, it's right there. And this, I'm a hypocrite because I hate tables that I can't see. But the intent was to say, well, what would it cost to meet those credits? And we looked in the last 3 to 5 years, and that's a slight increase in funding, but that's probably the funding we're going to have for the next 5 to 10 years. And then looked at those categories and only considered the road work, because that's the 70%. That's the tough part, and it's appropriate to be looking at road work at that 70%. And looking at that estimated cost that we've had in the past 3 years and looking at the credits we would receive, it was kind of what I thought. It's $1.9 million per year, and we would receive 10 credits. So I don't want to say take the proposal and throw it out, but it is something we need to look at. How do we make it workable so that we can show progress over time? And the last thing I think that's really critical, that, and it's an issue with all agencies, but in Forest Service too, we have to get that stability where we're getting funds at a standard, steady rate over time. One, that helps us hire local people to do the road work, which will save a lot of money and keeps it, the understanding is better within the local communities and how to restore their watersheds than contracts from out of the community. And that steady rate is going to have to, we have to look at partnerships. That's what we're told by the Washington office, and it's appropriate, but the funding's not going to increase dramatically. So we have to take what funds we have, I call it seed money, from the water board, from the forest, and put that into partnerships so that we can actually do the work that we want to do and show a continued steady trend increase and improvement are better than that. And that's really all I wanted to talk about today.
Thank you very much for your comments. Board members, do you have any questions? Okay, thank you. Next commenter.
Mr. Chair, before the next commenter, I just wanted to briefly note, so everyone knows what's going on with the order of commenters, that we were getting through the in-person commenters first. We held off a little bit on Bill's comment because we needed to make sure we could get that visual up on the screen. But now that we've had Bill from the Forest Service speak, we will take the final remaining in-person commenter, and then we'll go to Zoom. And on Zoom, we'll take all of the federal agency commenters first, and then go to the remaining commenters on Zoom. So just wanted to make sure everyone was aware of kind of where we are in the order of the how we plan to go to the commenters.
Thank you.
Tom?
Thank you. Well, while my presentation's being pulled up, my name is Tom Wheeler. I'm the executive director of EPIC. Ryan, nice to see you up here. Thank you first to staff for all their hard work. As Jonathan noted, we met with the regional board staff multiple times throughout the development of this WDR. And I deeply appreciate the hard work that is evident in this new permit system. Next slide, please. But to understand what we think might be potential issues with the new WDR, it's important to understand the failures of the previous waiver. So I want to focus on two things. First, it's the failure to complete treatments of controllable sediment discharge sources. For projects under the previous waiver that would produce anthropogenic sediment, the regional board would often require the treatment of legacy sediment sites, or CSDS as we are now calling them. But unfortunately, we've saw multiple instances under the old waiver where the federal agencies, in particular the Forest Service, failed to complete this work. So this was work required under the permit that never was accomplished. And that leads to the second failure, which was there wasn't really much of a consequence when this occurred. There was not appropriate enforcement action being taken by the regional board. So I think that we can see in this pattern, and this is a repeating pattern, issues that might emerge under the new WDR. Next slide, please. So I want to, in particular, draw attention to one project as kind of an example of this phenomenon. This is a photo from the West Side Fire Recovery Project on the Klamath National Forest. When it was approved, I think that West Side was the largest timber sale in modern California history. It's since been eclipsed by others like the R5 Hazard Tree Project. But it was massive, and it was worrying for us. Over 5,000 acres of post-fire logging, over 24,000 acres of fuel reduction, over 300 miles of hazard tree removal, all requiring substantial ground disturbance and associated sediment production. And some of this work also occurred in riparian reserves. So we had large feller bunchers churning disturbed soil. We had new skidder trails, temporary roads, new landings, etc. Nearly all of this occurred in watersheds, which were already above their thresholds of concern. And it wasn't just West Side. So this was often in areas where you had that kind of pattern of the checkerboard pattern, where there would be substantial private ownership adjacent to federal ownership. And on the private ownership, we also saw substantial post-fire logging as well. So it was clear that this was going to produce significant sediment pollution. Again, heavy equipment churning and compressing already disturbed ground. Because of the substantial impacts of this project, the Regional Water Board required the Forest Service to treat 165 legacy sediment sites. Those legacy sediment sites were to be completed starting in 2019. The project, the logging was to occur in 2016. The logging occurred, the legacy sediment site treatment never did, to my knowledge. These were included in a new project, the Elk Creek Fuels and Vegetation Project, which was ultimately canceled. So we didn't have the legacy sediment site treatment occur. I don't believe that there was ever any meaningful enforcement action taken against the Klamath National Forest for failing to do this legacy sediment site treatment. So ultimately, what this project produced was significant watershed impacts without any sort of mitigation for those impacts. Next slide. The cumulative result of poor federal land management is seems like this. This is the Klamath River. The Yurok tribe is hosting its salmon festival in 2 days. It's not going to have salmon, locally sourced salmon, for its salmon festival. It's going to have to buy salmon from Alaska or elsewhere because our watersheds are so impaired because of sediment pollution stemming largely from federal forest land management. When you look at the Klamath, there's basically one source for federal or for all this pollution because it's surrounded almost on all sides by federal lands. Next slide, please. So here are what we think are potential issues. And I'm saying potential issues because it's possible that the WDR works out perfectly. I think the new WARP system is an improvement over the legacy sediment site treatment system because it's going to enable the Forest Service and other federal actors to kind of better plan for doing this restoration treatment that's so necessary, repairing the roads, repairing the culverts, and so on, which are just bleeding sediment routinely into our water system. But there are two potential issues. First, anti-degradation. The previous waiver imposed legacy sediment site treatments ideally within the same watershed as project as impacts from projects. So there was kind of this thing where we tethered, you know, impacts to what were effectively mitigations. This new program divorces them. And again, I think that the WDR and the WARP program makes sense in divorcing them, but there are circumstances in which we could have an already impacted watershed being further impacted because of discretionary anthropogenic sediment pollution associated with federal projects. So the second issue is compliance. The history of the waiver suggests that compliance with regulating water quality issues is going to reemerge. I hope that this is not true, but in comments from the Forest Service on this WDR that you can find in the packet, the Forest Service also warns that they might not be able to do the warp treatments that are required of them. So again, we might not have the actual restoration of our watersheds that is necessary to occur. And that's a concern for us, because the permit and achieving water quality benefits is contingent on actually getting this work done. Next slide, please. So based on these potential issues, we have some suggested modifications to the WDR. So first, I think it's important to more explicitly retain authority to deny or condition enrollment. This is related to the anti-degradation concern raised earlier. The regional board, in its response to comments, has outlined that it believes it has the ability to deny project enrollment under the WDR. And if there's a project that's not a good fit for this WDR, or may produce significant impacts, that they might have to get a project-specific WDR. That's not clearly articulated in the permit. I think that that can be an improvement made. We also believe that the regional board should have the ability to condition enrollment. So if you have the discretion to deny enrollment, you should also have the ability to condition enrollment. So if the Forest Service does these additional things, if we don't believe that the BMPs are going to be sufficient to protect water quality, the regional board, the regional board staff who are experts here and engaging on a project by project basis, should be able to add additional conditions to projects. Second, given the kind of controversy with this, given this new regulatory system, we ask that the regional board come back at a public meeting annually to report on the implementation of the WDR. Is the WARP program proceeding as we hope that it will proceed? Are the treatments actually getting done? Are we seeing an improvement in watershed values as a result of the operation of this permit? I think that that is a pretty reasonable thing to annually come back and report to the public. And I know that this is work that the regional board staff is already going to be doing. They're reviewing WDR compliance always. So I don't think that this should be a heavy lift, but it does provide you, the board, an opportunity to do a course correction if we are finding out in 4 years' time, let's say, that the Forest Service is not completing their obligations. Third, and this is something that Kimberly Baker of EPIC has already talked about, we're uncomfortable with fuels treatments being included as a warp credit generating activity. It is confined. It's only 10% of total points, but it seems weird to us that fuels treatments is an ambiguous and undefined term, are things that might be required to be enrolled under this WDR as a category B activity because they pose a moderate threat to water quality, yet are still giving credit to the Forest Service as something that works to better water quality. As Kimberly said, not all fuels treatments are created equal, right? If we have a commercial thinning project that has substantial ground disturbance or is in a riparian area, or if we are seeing new landing construction, things like that, new road construction as a result of this fuels treatments, these are things that are going to materially impact water quality. It's going to generate sediment pollution. So because fuels treatments are kind of speculative, we hope that they will result in improved buyer behavior, but it's not certain. But it's relatively certain that some fuels treatments are going to produce sediment impacts. We don't think it's appropriate that they should receive credit under this warp crediting system. Thank you so much. I'm around to answer any questions should you have any.
Thank you very much for your comments.
Can I ask?
Yes.
Mr. Mueller? Yeah. Wheeler. Wheeler, apologies.
Yeah.
Thank you for your comments today. I just had a quick question for you. You mentioned that one of your concerns with the new permit is whether or not the work will actually be getting done.
Yeah.
And you didn't really talk about, you know, compared to now, what we have in place now. Do you believe work is getting done now? And if so, what are the positives or the negatives? Can you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to, again, say that I think that the warp system, as conceived, is probably an improvement over the existing waiver, right? So the waiver has difficulties. If you're the Forest Service and you have a project that then at the kind of conclusion of the project, when you're seeking enrollment, the regional board says, all right, well, here are these additional watershed improvements that you're going to have to make. You're going to have to treat these legacy sediment sites. That can kind of force the Forest Service to go and chase those projects instead of having a more systemic approach to improving water quality, to treating these legacy sediment sites. So I think the WARP program is likely to result in more treatments that will occur on the landscape. But I think that there is still the issue of the Forest Service and other federal agencies coming in below where they are obligated under this permit. And I think that the Forest Service has admitted to this being a problem in their response to comments. So this is, again, why I think that the regional board should kind of have greater control over this for the initial implementation period, because it seems that this is going to be a live issue that could emerge, and that could require the regional board to go back and tweak the program. So that's why we ask that it comes back annually for a public hearing to see, for the regional board staff to present to the board formally about the implementation of this new WDR.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I think my question is more either for Valerie or legal counsel. But how much, and I'll start, I'll just direct it to you, Valerie, and counsel can jump in. But how much discretion do you have as EO to make amendments to an enrollment as they come in? Is it a black and white situation for you, either accept or deny? Or can you get into a negotiation to make changes of a proposed enrollment?
Because I have not yet encountered that situation in my tenure as executive officer, I would refer that question to our legal counsel and our federal lands permit team. Thank you.
I can start with one answer, and if, I don't know if staff wants to come up and expand upon it, but there is some limitation in implementation of WDRs. Just within the water code, it limits delegation from the board to the executive officer for WDRs. So that's one thing to be aware of. But within the terms of the permit, and staff can speak to specifics more where the discretion is already outlined therein about additional measures. And then there is the upfront enforcement or upfront discretion, sorry, about enrollment that the findings contemplate, given the size or intensity of the project, that may not be eligible for enrollment to begin with.
Mr. Wheeler's comments about making some adjustments, that's what I was wondering. That's what caused me to ask the question is, well, do we have to make a decision now, or as the process plays out, can a decision be made? The fuels treatment is too big, or it's at the wrong time of the year, or whatever, and wanted to know what kind of discretion the EO has in making a decision.
Okay, it's a great question. And just for the board's benefit, finding D... Let me make sure I'm getting it right. D6 on page 10 of the proposed order. The intent of that language is to make it clear that some projects may not be eligible for enrollment.
Okay. That's a good start. Thank you.
We can move on to the commenters who are on Zoom. Sam Flanagan. Could you unmute and state your name to make sure we can hear you?
Yeah, good morning. Chair Bedoya, members of the board, thanks for having the meeting and coming up to Eureka. My name is Sam Flanagan. I work for the Bureau of Land Management as our state aquatic resources program lead. Been involved working with your North Coast staff for a number of years, and I really want to commend the staff for the job they've done, the communication they provided, and just their partnership level work. I don't know if my overhead made, there it is. I'm showing a picture of Cow Mountain in Ukiah, our Ukiah field office. This is Cow Mountain, just to the east of the town of Ukiah. It's a really popular OHV area. It's about 70 square miles. About 90 miles of trails, roads, and it straddles the divide between the Russian River and Clear Lake. And really the point I wanted to draw out here in My talk is, this is an example where two water board jurisdictions abut one another. We have the Central Valley on the east and the North Coast on the Russian River side. And typically that falls to one person to prepare two separate permits. As you all know or will hear comments, the Central Valley Board is also proposing a non-point source permit process, similar but substantially different. So on the west side, we'll have this WARP program and a host of monitoring reports and timelines. And then on the east side, on the Central Valley side, we'll have a differing set of treatment quotas and standards and a different suite of monitoring reports. Let me point out, we don't disagree with the fact that our roads and trails need treatments and there's problem sites out there. I don't think we're in disagreement there. And I'll point out that all four water boards right now that have non-point source issues for federal lands sort of up for adoption, Wahontan, the Central Valley, the Central Coast, and the North Coast, obviously, they all recognize roads as a problem. And I think, you know, speaking for the BLM, we don't disagree with that. And, you know, many of us have spent our careers doing just that, assessing and identifying and treating road sediment sources. So the point I wanted to draw here is we have four different permitting processes coming at us, and we really need a consistent approach across the state. And that's consistent monitoring, consistent reporting. As it stands now, field staff are going to have huge learning curves, two separate permitting processes. A couple of our field offices have three water board jurisdictions overlapping. So really want to emphasize the need for consistency across the state. So I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Sam, have you got time for a question?
Oh, sure.
Thanks. Dealing with Cow Mountain, do you have at your fingertips the number of day user days of OHV activity on that parcel of land?
I don't have at my fingertips, and it's a heavily used area. And
I could tell you, 25 years ago, Rich Burns, who was the manager, told me that the number was close to 70,000 user days a year.
Yep.
Does that sound about right?
That sounds about right. And we're launching into a project up there to treat sediment sources to do exactly the stuff we all want to be doing. But we're going to be faced with the prospect of, like I said, two different permitting protocols for one management area. So we're really kind of fleshing out right now our inventory, our assessment scheme, and how we're going to prioritize treatments across two separate jurisdictions.
Thanks.
You bet.
Thank you, Sam, for your comments.
Genevieve, you can unmute and turn on your camera if you like. Make sure we can hear you.
Can you hear me now?
We can. Thank you.
Oh, good. I'm sorry. My camera is not working on my laptop here, so I apologize for that. I'm Genevieve Rasmussen, and I am the Associate Deputy State Director for Natural Resources for the Bureau of Land Management, California. I want to thank you all for being here, and I want to thank the board for allowing the Bureau of Land Management to speak. The Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management appreciate the time and effort put into developing this permitting process. We recognize that what you presented today was not a light lift. As noted in the August 9th letter sent to the board from the BLM California and the Forest Service, we have serious concerns regarding our ability to implement the permit process of the North Coast Regional Water Quality Board, as it has been put forward. The BLM and the Forest Service are here together to share our mutual objective of mitigating impacts to water quality. However, we believe the proposed permit needs a larger statewide approach to be most effective. As has already been presented, this is only one of four permits being considered at this time. We are here to ask that you pause in a decision on this matter and allow for time for the state, the water boards, and the federal agencies may work together on a collaborative approach. Collectively, the workload of individual permits at the regional board level with their associated monitoring, reporting, assessment, and treatment requirements, combined with substantially different requirements across regional boards, presents several challenges that will impede the federal agency's ability to adhere to the permitting process. As proposed, the BLM would be unable to implement fuels and other meaningful landscape health projects at the pace and scale needed to address the ongoing wildfire crisis in California, a priority for all of us. Additionally, the proposed permitting requirements run counter to the Federal Anti-Deficiency Act. Current federal funding streams simply cannot accomplish all of these multiple permit requirements simultaneously, and we would be in a predicament of deciding between being in violation of the federal anti-deficiency laws or in violation of state permitting. This is not a choice we want to have to make. Each of the four proposed permits differs substantially in their monitoring and reporting requirements. This uncoordinated approach across several administrative boundaries, which Sam just demonstrated, it creates unnecessary green tape that will impede us from meeting our shared water quality goals. The federal agencies continue to treat legacy sediment sources. We are dedicated to improve water quality on the lands we manage. And at this time, I'd like to thank the Water Board staff, Jonathan, Devin, Forrest, and Carly, that have worked with our Arcata office to procure funding for critical water quality improvement projects. We value this working partnership. The federal agencies suggest that a monitoring program be linked to the implementation of BMPs, which the BLM has recently implemented, and the Forest Service has a history of demonstrating as an effective feedback loop to management. The BLM and other states have demonstrated success of addressing non-point source issues through a statewide MOU with their respective water quality or DEQ agencies. The federal agencies believe a similar approach would be effective here, and we could use examples from these other locations as a place to begin together to find a solution that makes sense for California and all agencies involved. In conclusion, the BLM, alongside the Forest Service, suggest a cooperative, partnership-level approach is the most effective way to address non-point source issues across the region. Such an approach could leverage collective funding streams to address ongoing non-point source issues and minimize the proposed unnecessary green tape. On behalf of the BLM California, I thank you for your time and look forward to the opportunity to work with you in finding a solution to California's non-point source issues in a way that is effective and considers other critical issues, such as California's wildfire crisis. Thank you.
Genevieve, do you have a moment for a question?
I do, yes.
Can you identify something for the board here that would be a commonality between other regions that you could point to that would allow your staff to better manage projects or implementation practices? Is there something like a specific concern you can point to, not just the whole general permit?
A particular differing monitoring requirements in particular is one concern. Is that what you're asking? Is what are our concerns or what are our
Yes, but like within those monitoring reports, just pick out one element that shows some differences and why that would be such a lift for your staff.
I would like to defer to Sam Flanagan and see if he could respond as the technical expert. He would probably be able to better respond to that question.
Great. If we can get Sam back on, that'd be great.
Yeah. Can you hear me all right?
Yes. Hi, Sam. Thank you.
Yeah. So, having gone through the four different proposed regional board permit processes, using monitoring and reporting as an example, each differs sort of in the specific metrics we're going to look at? Are we going to look at BMP implementation on the hill slope, the timing of those reports, and the frequency of those reports? They all differ. There's some assessment requirements for sediment source assessments, CSDS assessments that differ between the Central Valley and the North Coast. The Central Valley has both a project footprint sediment assessment requirement and then a more independent assessment, much like the WARP, whereas the North Coast has the WARP assessment with a very different quota system. So there's a lot of nuanced differences among the various monitoring and reporting requirements.
So in your the BLM's views, would it be better to just have a blanket permit for the state? And would there be opportunity to address those nuances and actually improving water quality within each one of these watersheds, or taking an approach that can be a little bit more curated for each watershed? I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'll jump back in. There's definitely a need for a consistent statewide approach. One of the things I don't necessarily see in the four non-point source permits is nobody peels out the regional differences. They all say roads are a problem, legacy sediment sites are a problem. I think it's set up really well for a consistent statewide approach. And there's some great examples coming from the Lahontan, from the Central Coast Board, of, you know, sort of existing monitoring templates that could be used and adapted across the state. So, I mean, there's a lot of good pieces that we have out there. And I think it's just a matter of, you know, rounding it all up into one steady approach.
Mm-hmm. And if I may, can you hear me now?
Yes.
If I may add in regards to that as well, we have looked hard, and we've looked at other states as well. And, you know, in our concerns regarding the Anti-Deficiency Act, we do believe that the MOU approach on a statewide basis makes a lot of sense for us to work towards commonalities and goals and stuff and setting. But we recognize that the fact is that the individual water boards retain regulatory authority. And so we want to make sure that what we're saying is, yes, we do believe that a consistent approach, and preferably under an MOU format, makes it works much better for the agencies. However, that we want to acknowledge and recognize the fact that the regulatory authority resides with the local individual water boards.
Genevieve, you both mentioned that you've looked at other states. Which other states have you all been comparing California to?
We don't compare California to any other state, of course. We're looking at their processes. California, of course, is awesome. Sam, was it Colorado? Was that the one?
We have Utah and Montana as statewide examples. And then, I'll defer to the Forest Service. There is the master agreement that was implemented several years ago. It was before my time with the BLM, but I know the Forest Service has a history of implementing stuff at an MOU level that might serve as a good launching pad too for refinements.
Thank you. I think there might be a few more questions.
Mr. Chair, through you, I guess I'm surprised at the level of discussion on this issue that's going on at this time. I'm the newest board member, so I come very late to this 20-year process, where it was my understanding that the state board had declined to enter into such a statewide permitting process, and that it was very specifically ordained by the state board that we as a regional board would come up with this document and this EIR that is in front of us today. I'll just say as my comment that I'm surprised that we're hearing testimony now from the federal agencies that say they can't implement what we are proposing to do. I'll have further comments during our time for board discussion, but I just wanted to make it clear I was very surprised at the tenor of this discussion.
I think that it was, well, I know that I personally have been involved in discussions, not with the North Coast, but in the Central Valley for 7 years, that we have been discussing our concerns ongoing, and I believe that the same thing has been brought forward with the North Coast. It wasn't until recently that we realized that four different efforts were ongoing from the BLM's perspective, and that the ultimate differences that were going to be causing us such problems. I would say that's been within the last year, and we've tried to bring some of that forward at the, you know, staff level, and we just really need the boards to hear this at this time. Again, I don't want to, we continue to evaluate our partnership with the North Coast staff, and I don't in any way wish to say that they haven't been good partners in working through this process.
Well, thank you very much for your comments, Sam and Genevieve.
Okay, Rick Hobson, you can unmute to make sure we can hear you.
Okay, I think hopefully you can see me as well.
We can see and hear you. Thank you.
Awesome, great. Thank you for that. Hey, good morning, everybody. My name is Rick Hobson. I'm with the U.S. Forest Service. I'm a deputy director of the Ecosystem Management Staff, and you'll hear some similar comments from me as you did from Genevieve and Sam, because we've been working together and submitting some letters and coordinating as well. So hopefully that's going to be a helpful thing. But just want to start off by saying thank you to Chair Padilla and the board members, as well as the staff of the North Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board, especially Executive Officer Valerie Quinto and staff, for this opportunity to comment. So like I said, I'm regionally Deputy Director of the Ecosystem Management Staff, which is natural resources and includes water quality and aquatic resources. But I also want to add in some of my background, I've worked as a district ranger in this region, had a little about almost 12 years of on the management side, and then worked in three different national forests as a hydrologist, as well as in another region as regional hydrologist, the position that Gabe Venegas is in right now, and has some experience working with other boards there as well. So at this time, I just wanted to make sure we recognized that we have submitted a letter. Genevieve and I have briefed our leadership, acting state director Gordon Toews, as well as regional forester Jennifer Eberlein, about some concerns, and a letter was submitted, should be in the record. And it's already been spoken to, I think, here pretty well by the BLM, but really the concern of how we're going to manage multiple permits that are quite a bit different, and we think it's increasing in the complexity, as well as the nuances of say one Forest Service unit or BLM area having to respond to different permit requirements. We're really quite puzzled how we're going to do that successfully. So we've been indicating to others in the other water boards and here, State Water Resources Control Board, Cal EPA, that we really would be interested in working towards a more unified approach, recognizing the uniqueness of each of the boards that Chair Padilla that you mentioned earlier. We definitely recognize that, but we think for some things like the WARP, and I'll get into that in a little bit, we think we could probably be a little more consistent in how we do that. And then I question as well if it makes sense to have it as a regulatory permit requirement. So just want to recognize those comments that were submitted already and don't want to repeat those right now. So I'm going to speak, probably glance over a little bit some of the concerns about anti-deficiency, but we have that same concern as well too. And I think Genevieve said it really well. So if you're a forest supervisor on a unit and you're managing complex programs in a complex environment that we're in with the wildfire crisis, and having to make a decision and having concerns about anti-deficiency, meaning that Congress prohibits us from spending money that they haven't purposed to us or for purposes other than they gave us. And maybe we need to dive down deeper into the details of this expectation from the WARP which is similar to what the Central Valley is presenting. But we feel like that would be, we would be liable against federal law, just to put it bluntly, and having to make a choice between meeting the permit requirements and or meeting the federal requirements as well. So we think there might be ways around that. Again, Genevieve mentioned MOUs, other agreements. I would further go to share that in my experience as a district ranger, I think there's a limit to how far regulatory actions are really effective. Yeah, you can. We can push more. We can. You know, kind of be almost threatening and compliance requirements and punishments through that. But it doesn't necessarily solve water quality problems. I had a lot more experience, success, I should say, working with a collaborative approach, with collaboration groups and with partners like the state. And I personally would think we have a lot of a very valuable work we could do, including other partners like Epic that spoke today as well, moving down that path. So additionally, the other comment I really wanted to make is the wildfire crisis situation. Personally, I feel that the wildfire crisis presents a clear and present danger to our natural resources, including and perhaps especially the water quality. As I shared earlier, I've had a fair amount of experience in the Western states and a lot of that in California. And I've not seen anything close to the impacts of wildfire on water quality. So my concern is that the additional requirements in this permit is really going to force the Forest Service and potentially the BLM as well to put much more of the resources in the permit requirements and regulatory requirements and not addressing the big need in the wildfire crisis at this time. So, and I would welcome to talk a little bit more about that. So in closing, I'm pretty much out of time here. 5 minutes goes by very quickly, and hopefully we can have future discussions on these topics. But just want to say, you know, thank you very much for the time here. We are very supportive, and we feel like we are a effective and really in as a water quality management agency. And I personally feel like we're just still working through the nuances and how we're going to really make that work. So we're not just kind of battling sabers, so to speak, but really trying to address the problems on the ground. So thank you for your time, and I'm welcome to take any questions.
Thank you for your comments. Next.
Kirk. Kirk Wilbur, if you can unmute, and you can turn your camera on if you like. We can see you. If we can just make sure real quick we can hear you.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
All right, thank you. Good. Let's see, is it still morning? Yes, good morning, board and chair and board. My name is Kirk Wilbur. I am with the California Cattlemen's Association. We represent more than 1,700 cattle producers throughout the state who pride themselves on the responsible stewardship of the state's land, water, and wildlife resources, and several of whom are federal grazing permits on federal lands within the North Coast region. Cattle ranchers grazing on federal lands work diligently with their line officers to ensure that they are meeting the standards and guides detailed in their forest plans. And each year, ranchers are issued annual operating instructions to ensure the proper stewardship of the natural resources on their specific allotments. Ranchers have a vested interest in safeguarding natural resources to ensure future productivity of the lands their cattle and livelihoods depend on, and CCA members routinely engage with cooperative extension specialists to ensure that they are on the cutting edge of rangeland management. All that is to underscore that ranchers, including federal grazing permittees, are steadfastly committed to safeguarding the quality of waters that pass through the lands that they manage. That said, CCA does have specific concerns regarding the federal lands permit order under discussion today. CCA is particularly troubled by ambiguity in the monitoring and reporting program regarding what triggers indicator bacteria monitoring on grazing allotments. The MRP states that North Coast Water Board staff may require indicator bacteria monitoring as a result of North Coast Water Board staff observations of apparent water quality impacts supported by complaints from communities of interest and or conflicting assessments regarding sufficient grazing management practices. That was a quote, by the way. First, it is unclear what would constitute conflicting assessments regarding sufficient grazing management practices. The U.S. Forest Service should have sole authority to assess whether its best management practices have been sufficiently implemented by the agency's grazing permittees. It is unclear whose assessment would conflict with the Forest Service's assessment, which we believe that the agency's assessment ought to be authoritative. Additionally, we are concerned that monitoring is proposed to be triggered in part by, quote, complaints from communities of interest, unquote, as that provision of the order can be abused by interest groups whose agendas call for the elimination of livestock grazing on federal lands. In sum, indicator bacteria monitoring should only be triggered by a Forest Service assessment that BMPs have not been adhered to, coupled with Water Board staff findings of apparent water quality impacts. I'd also like to echo concerns addressed in the written comments of both the Mendocino National Forest and the Mendocino County Farm Bureau regarding the burden that the order places upon U.S. Forest Service personnel. This concern has been echoed by speakers today from the Forest Service and other management agencies. Many Forest Service units are understaffed, and this order places significant additional burdens on existing personnel within the forests of the North Coast region. Certainly in a budget year like this one, I suspect the water boards are sympathetic to the pressure of such staffing and resource shortages on those agencies. We urge the board to facilitate flexibility in implementing the order should staffing or funding constraints render strict compliance with the order by Forest Service staff infeasible. Finally, I'd like to call attention to a concern raised in the written comments submitted by the Six Rivers National Forest, specifically that, quote, the impacts of large-scale, high-intensity fire have the potential to affect water quality at a scale orders of magnitude greater than sources of existing water quality impairments on national forest lands, unquote. That is, again, a concern that has been echoed by several speakers today. It is well established that cattle grazing is an effective tool for reducing fire fuels, reducing the incidence of wildfire, and establishing more manageable conditions for fire suppression when fires do arise. While cattle producers are committed to minimizing non-point sources of pollution from their livestock, we urge the board to be mindful of the indirect benefits of grazing for protecting water quality within the North Coast region. Thank you.
Board, any comments? Thank you. Thank you, sir, for your comments. Deidre, next.
Jasmine, you can unmute and turn on your camera if you like. Make sure we can see and hear you.
Hello. Are you able to see me?
Yes, thank you.
Cool. Sorry, I couldn't see myself. My name is Jasmine Randall, and I'm the executive director of the Mendocino County Farm Bureau. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak today regarding the proposed federal land permits. First, I want to highlight the difficulties associated with the proposed credit accrual system. I know you guys mentioned changing that, but the framework offers no time for land managers to earn credits, and the past treatments are not factored, or we're wondering if the past treatments were factored into the WARP. And overall, the lack of consideration for historical effort undermines the progress that's already been made on these lands. Next, we have the scoring system as proposed appears arbitrary and lacks a clear connection to the TMDLs. We are concerned about the emphasis on duplicative monitoring instead of channeling resources into additional monitoring and reporting. We think the focus should be on more tangible restoration projects that yield real environmental benefits. It's also concerning that the Water Board seems to be taking over responsibilities that we're aware that the Forest Service is fully capable of handling, which kind of raises the questions about efficiency and overlapping. There seems to be a narrative being pushed that BMPs are ineffective or insufficient, and our region already conducts extensive multiple indicator monitoring, and we would appreciate clarification on why the other effective monitoring is necessary, considering that we do it already. And as the Mendocino National Forest said within their comments, they were seeking more ways to conduct monitoring on range allotments from using tables or tablets and data collection to form partnerships. And overall, we just see that it's essential to eliminate or reduce duplication of reporting, which will be crucial for maintaining efficiency. And then regarding livestock impacts, the assignment of a value of 0.15 for livestock seems to assume that all livestock impacts are equal, which seems pretty simplistic. I know you have to have a range between them, but I think there should, once again, it's just simplistic. Additionally, the coefficient of 0.25 for TMDL watershed raises questions about whether it's cumulative with grazing or merely additive. And we're also puzzled about how a 75% treated watershed triggers a 0.5 value change, and more transparency in these calculations might be beneficial for us. And it seems like the Water Board might be frustrated with the amount of information required from the Forest Service, which will raise concerns about whether sufficient funds are available to proceed with these requirements. On page 16 of the MRP, it's noted that the committees of interest can submit complaints that could trigger indicator bacteria monitoring, which the executive director could require. And this seems like a convenient but potentially problematic provision that could create unnecessary burdens. And finally, we want to question whether there was adequate consultation with experts such as those at the University of California Rangelands, as it's not clear that this proposed order is informed. And the outreach conducted didn't seem to include any meetings with grazing permittees or their representatives, which is kind of a significant oversight. Overall, this document seems to imply that the Forest Service lacks policies and programs, which isn't really the case. So we urge the board to reconsider the permits with input from all stakeholders and permittees to ensure effective solutions will both support the environment and land users. Thanks.
Thank you, Jasmine, for your comments today. This question is going to be maybe geared more towards staff, if that's allowed at the moment. But it kind of in response to what Jasmine brought up about consultation with experts in the field, i.e. UC Davis Rangeland Lab. I saw in the notes in the response to comments that staff did indeed meet with UC Rangeland. Can you expound for the public about kind of the result of those communications? And I mean, what was your take on it? Is there continued efforts speaking with them? I mean, just explain that for the public, please. Thank you.
Hello, Forrest Fortescue, Senior Engineering Geologist of your staff. Yes, we did, during the course of the federal lands development, I participated in a meeting with some Region 5 staff at UC Davis Wildland, or the lab with Dr. Kent Tate's lab, going through sort of the approaches that they have developed for grazing on private lands, and we discussed some of the research that they've conducted on federal lands as well. The approach that we've ended up going with for livestock grazing in this permit is largely to rely on the federal proper implementation of the federal grazing standards. And so we aren't making prescriptive changes to the on-the-ground work that permittees are doing in their allotments. We're really focused on federal agencies working with permittees and implementing their programs effectively.
So in that meeting, was it just Water Board staff, or were there other agency folks participating in that meeting as well?
I believe that meeting was with staff from the North Coast Regional Water Board and the Central Valley Regional Water Board at that moment.
And so I take it from the meeting, it was much more of a general understanding approach to rangeland grazing across the state, not necessarily, hey, there's some differences that lie in Region 1 compared to Region 5, some substantial differences.
This was earlier in the development process before we had the full draft of our permit developed.
And it was just a single meeting. There weren't follow-ups.
Yes, it was a single meeting.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Board members, any other questions? Thank you for your comments, Deidre.
Matt, if you can please unmute and you can turn on your camera if you like.
Do you hear my audio at this point?
We can hear you, but your screen is black. We don't see you.
Well, I'm trying to get my camera to work well.
We can see you now.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to say good afternoon as we are quickly migrating towards the noon hour. Chair, members of the board, my name is Matt Diaz. I am the president of the California Forestry Association. And I just wanted to bring up a couple points today. First of all, I apologize for not being there in person. I really was trying to clear my schedule to get there today in person, but I had to ask one of my colleagues, Ms. Goldsworthy, to assist because I just cannot make the 5-hour drive today. With that said, I wanted to reiterate our recommendations, number one, and I wanted to address a couple of the astute comments and questions that I've heard from not only the chair, but members of the board as well. So the recommendations from Cal Forest at this time is to essentially adopt both orders 0012 and 00232, respectively, for a period of 90 days. And then to encourage staff, direct staff to work not only collaboratively with other entities out there, being the the Wildfire and Forest Resiliency Task Force, the Resources Agency, Cal EPA, State Water Board, industry representatives, Forest Service personnel, BLM personnel, to take a statewide programmatic approach. And the questions I wanted to ask, wanted to address is that I believe it was Member Hart asked why 90 days. And I felt like from the perspective of the Forestry Association, who is working very hard with our federal partners to effectuate projects in the face of a wildfire crisis, that a 90-day period would provide the coverage necessary for the Forest Service to continue operations, projects, if you will, that are currently in the works without being at risk of not being covered by a permitting mechanism by this board, but would also drive and incentivize North Coast Board staff to take a leadership role in trying to work with other entities and advocate on a statewide approach with the expectation that in a 90-day period, they could report back and report to you all on progress that has been made in identifying what opportunities exist for a programmatic approach on this on a statewide level. We also heard today a comment by the chair talking about the unique nature of the North Coast region, and I do not disagree that there is some unique efforts or unique environmental elements to the North Coast region, but I do want to point out that this idea of taking a statewide approach is not unique. And in fact, it was only a couple of years ago that the state board adopted a statewide programmatic approach for enrollment of projects under the California Vegetation Treatment Program. That program spans 20 million acres and carries across all regions in the state and all veg types across the state, and supports a myriad of projects. So my point is that a template exists that we could rely upon and investigate to see if that level of permitting, if you will, would be applicable to federal projects as well, and also achieve some of the streamlining that we are trying to achieve on a statewide basis across all the partners that are working very hard to try to make the changes necessary so that our communities and forested landscapes aren't dramatically impacted by wildfire. And the last issue I wanted to bring up was a question that was just raised by Member McKenzie, who indicated that based on his research, and your research is accurate, that in 2004, the State Water Board decided to delegate these authorities to the regional boards. And that is accurate. That is absolutely 100% true. But 2004 was a different time in California. And we are in a place right now where we are amidst in a crisis, and we are losing communities, and we are losing millions of acres a year. And in fact, to date, this year, we're already rapidly approaching 1 million acres lost to wildfire in the state. So while in the past, the state board did decide to delegate, I think that under the initiative of cutting green tape and the initiative of trying to combat a wildfire crisis, we are in a place where we can recontemplate that type of strategy to try to help each other out. And the decision that you have today before you, I think, could be the tip of the spear for your partner agencies, either at the water board level, the federal level, the CNRA level, the Cal EPA level, to signal to them that this board is supportive of the initiative of cutting green tape and is supportive of taking a leadership role in investigating a statewide opportunity that would either mirror the Cal VTP process or maybe engage in MOU development, as we've heard from other testifiers today. And with that, I will cede the rest of my time and am available for questions if any exist. Thank you.
Mr. Diaz, thank you so much for your presentation. I have a couple specific questions. I might put you on the spot here, but sure. Of the 176 million board feet target for the North Zone, can you tell me how much actually sold? And then from that sale amount, can you differentiate? And I think this is the important point. Can you differentiate how much of it was saw log compared to biomass or fuel wood?
You know what? I'm going to be honest with you, Member Hart. The point of my testimony today is not based on economics. It is not based on board foot sale. It is not based on biomass production and those that material going to facilities that I admittedly do represent. It would be very easy for me to get that information for you. But the point of what I'm trying to get at is that we are all leaning in, trying to support BLM, trying to support the Forest Service, trying to do cross-boundary work, much of it, of which is not economically driven at all. We just are trying to figure out pathways to get work done cross-jurisdictionally so that we have natural assets that can be relied upon for tactical advantages and wildfire suppression, changing structure within forest and landscape so that when fires happen, they don't happen at such high severity. So my testimony today, while I do understand and can see the view from your perspective of Cal Forest coming in and coming from a perspective of economic viability, that is not where we come from today. But I will get to the answer to the question. It will not take me long.
Thank you, Mr. Diaz. I really appreciate that. And I think it'll help provide some clarity to this ongoing question and concern by various public members or members of the public regarding the WARP. Forgive me, I'm getting all my acronyms mixed up, but the what qualifies as a mitigation or treatment and under WARP. And I just think it's really important to have the timber industry's perspective in on this concern. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
If I might, through you to our council, I've heard various references to 90 days, and I can't find any references to 90 days. I mean, if, in fact, we proceeded to adopt the staff recommendations this afternoon, is there a mandatory review by the state board? Is that the matter to which has been referred?
I believe the 90 days is just a proposal by the interested persons on the duration of the permit until those talks can occur. The specific finding proposed by staff doesn't speak to any specific duration. And then I think your last question about state board review, there is a petition process either by its own motion or by request of any person. And that's within 30 days of board action.
Sorry, a request by any person to the state board for a review of our action? I'm having problems hearing.
Oh, I'm sorry. There might be standing provisions about who is, but any interested person, I believe, can petition the state board to review an action of the regional board.
Thank you.
Just to add one other point to that, the state board can also always choose to take up a matter on its own initiative and its own motion. They don't need a petition from a party. They can choose to review a regional board action if they deem it worthwhile.
Well, that's a fascinating topic, and I'm planning to bring this up again when it's time for full board discussion. Thank you.
Mr. Diaz, thank you for your comments.
I believe we have one more commenter on the list. Carrie, if you could please unmute and you can turn your camera on if you like.
Hello, Carrie Fisher, Senior Counsel for the California Farm Bureau Federation. And I'd like to echo the comments of our colleagues, Mendocino County Farm Bureau and the California Cattlemen's Association. I also wanted to raise a few additional comments. One thing that we are somewhat concerned with the proposed WDR is that grazing permittees can be subject to enforcement actions, even though they're not directly permitted by the WDR. And this is found on page 15 of the order. This raises a lot of concerns since this is not a permit for grazing permittees or users of the national forests. And so we have a lot of concerns on that provision of the order and how it will be interpreted, especially because if the federal agency doesn't comply with provisions of the WDR, we do not think that it's legally fair or legal at all for grazing permittees to be held liable. There's also another concern that we have that the WDR doesn't comply with water codes Section 13360, and that portions of the order dictate the manner of compliance for grazing permittees and for the Forest Service by requiring specific on-the-ground prescription of certain federal management practices. And finally, we have concerns that the WDR creates duplicity with federal management of forests and ignores existing U.S. Forest Service monitoring programs and watershed protection and restoration activities. There's ways that we would suggest that the WDR could be modified and so that U.S. Forest Service activities are recognized and their work is utilized instead of regulated a second time by the state. Thank you.
Harry, following that statement, what is there something you can suggest that would be a modification that would make it acceptable?
Without rewriting the whole permit or at least the grazing portion of the permit, I couldn't give you one suggestion off right now.
Thank you.
Jonathan, can you address the holding the permittees accountable, please?
The elevation of this mic is better for me, so excuse me. Thank you for the question, Chair Bedoya. The reason why we included that finding in the order regarding potential for enforcement of a grazing permittee was just for full disclosure that that's already an existing authority that the Water Board has. We didn't want to be silent on the fact that a non-compliant grazing permittee who isn't adhering to their annual operating instructions and let's say is just causing water quality impacts that are significant. We didn't want to be silent on the fact that there is the capacity within the Water Board to actually take an action, an enforcement action against an individual. It wasn't for the purpose of coming off as threatening to grazing allottees or permittees, but just to clarify and be frank that there are circumstances under which we might find ourselves in the extreme sense having to use our own authority outside of this permit.
Thank you very much. The transparency is clear.
I would just state that I don't believe how it's written on page 15 is clear. I think that should have been a separate paragraph in the WDR apart from enforcement and failure of an administrative unit to comply with the permit. Because as it's currently written, it's easily interpreted that if the federal government doesn't comply, the Water Board will just then go after the grazing permittee. So I would respectfully request that that be pulled out and put in a different portion of the permit if you're just going to rely on existing water code authority.
Along the same lines, John, I'm going to talk to you, Jonathan, but Bailey or Nate might jump in. For background, for 20 plus years, I was the chair of the Animal Damage Committee for the California Forest Pest Council. And every year we would do a survey of forest landowners asking them what the top five vertebrate pests were impacting their activities. Without fail, livestock were always in the top five in all those 20 years, mostly from trampling on seedlings. But it made me think about these federal lands that are not fenced and that are checkerboarded with private land. Livestock can go where they want, when they want. If the Forest Service writes a permit and a permittee releases their livestock and that livestock moves on to a private land parcel and is found to be impacting water quality, who's ultimately responsible for, who's held accountable for the impacts to water quality? And before you answer me that it's a range, that it's an open range county, counselor, because we've had this discussion. I'm not talking about trespass. I'm talking about impacts to water quality. So who would be ultimately responsible if a landowner said, I've got impacts here on my, either from trampling or manure deposition in waterways. Who do we talk to? Is it the permittee which ultimately allowed the cows to come on public land? Or And again, I'm not trying to kick cows off public land. I'm not trying to hold any individual responsible, but that seems to be a question that I've had to deal with for a large portion of my career.
I can start and others feel free to add in. Just to be clear, I guess there's the permit conditions and regulation over the federal agencies and the terms that comply with that. But I think maybe separate from that, it's who's owner operator for purposes of the water code enforcement. And I think, you know, we could get into the nuances of the facts, but perhaps the activity of the grazing as the operator would be ultimately liable. But I'm hoping others would chime in with more specific input.
It's a very nuanced discussion. I don't actually have anything more specific to add on that.
I guess I would just add, you know, any under the water code, any person who is discharging waste, not an authorization with a permit or causing a condition of pollution or nuisance, can be held responsible.
But there is no permit to allow livestock on private land. It's a permit to allow livestock on public land that are trespassing on public land. So is the owner of, is the impactee responsible, or is the impactor responsible?
Well, whoever is causing the discharge has some responsibility for it, whether it's the landowner or the operator who's grazing it.
Initially, the public agency allowed the livestock to be deposited on their land. They started the process.
So if you're asking, could we take an enforcement action against either one of those entities, I think the answer is we could. We could take an action against either the operator grazing the cows or against the permittee that's allowing that discharge to occur. I think they're both potential options.
And just to add to that, I mean, totally consistent with, I mean, the discretion in naming the underlying landowner who may be different from the operator. I mean, there is a lot of enforcement discretion in those decisions. That's why it really gets down to the nuance of the specific case.
This is probably going to be too much of a specific question, but is there an example of a private lands being leased and water quality impacts, and they were gone after? Who was gone after in the case? Was it the lessee or the landowner? Because if we have a case already on the books that kind of handles that, would that not be somewhat applicable to this case? Because it's the federal agencies that own the land. I mean, it would.
They're the ones that give.
No, I know, but they're the ones who are effectively, in this case, the landowner, right?
I would disagree. We're the landowners. The public is the landowners.
Okay.
Well, just to answer your question, Board Member Hart, there are plenty of examples in different contexts and in the cleanups case context where we have releases from gas stations or underground storage tanks, where we have a whole succession of responsible parties that includes owners, operators, lessees. So there's precedent for it. I mean, it really does get down to the specifics of the case in terms of who do we name as a responsible party and hold liable for that. But the fundamental principle is broad. You know, anyone who had control over that activity could be held responsible.
Thank you, Nate.
Yeah.
Chair Bedoya?
Yeah.
Mind if I just add the conversation a little as one of the chiefs of our enforcement here? Sorry, Josh Curtis, for those who don't know. So I mean, our focus on this permit when it comes to grazing, I think, is, and I understand the concern and issue about enforcement, but if you read through kind of our goal and what we want, really it's about, you know, having the federal agencies follow their own guidance, their own requirements that they already have put as a requirement, right? Making sure that they meet those. And then when that's found to not work, having a feedback to check back in next time to make corrections. You know, we do not see this as a permit to be an extensive grazing violation permit. We don't, I mean, that's not where we're focused. We do have those authorities. They're in the water code. You know, we are a powerful agency in that way. But that isn't the focus of what this is going. It's really to try to to make it easy for the feds to comply by following their own guidance and direction, making that a requirement, and then feedbacks to fix the problem when they're addressed. So I just wanted to be clear that that's how the permit is designed.
Thank you, Josh. All right, if there are no more comments, we will take a break, lunch break. Back in, what do you suggest, Valerie?
It's 12:10 now. Maybe we could round it out and come back at 1 o'clock on the dot.
15-minute
lunch.
We'll resume at 1 o'clock. All right, we're resuming our meeting. First and foremost, I want to thank the staff for working so diligently and detailing out this order and working with all the constituents and cooperating with all the agencies. And just want to thank you for replying to all those 300 comments and the effort that in itself took. It was pretty magnificent. Thank you. And so now we'll consider, we will deliberate. Board members, you have any questions or questions of staff to make clarifications or anything else?
Thank you. So there was quite a bit of discussion around a permit for the state. There's quite a bit of discussion about an overall permit for the state. Do you guys have any update on where they're at with that, or if it's in process, talked about?
Yeah, I think I'll reply to that, Board Member Sundberg. So we, a little bit of history, and I think it got a little confused in the comments, but it was in 2009 that the state board took up a process to try to create a statewide federal lands permit. They brought it to the board at the state board, is my understanding, and that was, and they decided not to approve it. I don't know all the reasons behind that, but they then directed regional boards to do it themselves. And so we had already had a permit, and as you saw, and continued to regulate federal lands up until now. The state board at any time can decide to move forward with a statewide permit. They don't have any current plans like in the current immediate scheduled resources that they have that they're doing, as far as we know. But they could make that change today. We have to provide coverage under the non-point source policy for federal lands. We've already been covering, we have to continue that coverage. A statewide permit would take years to develop. The Cal VTP, which was discussed earlier, it's an interesting concept of thinking of that as a possible example we might follow. I haven't looked at that at all to know whether it would work, but the actual effort to put the Cal VTP forward was years of work. And much of that work was done outside of the regional boards and done by, or the state board was done by other agencies. So if my assessment is that if we went forward to try to develop a statewide effort, it would take 4 to 5 years to do so. Maybe if there was extreme political pressure or desire, it could be sped up, but it would be years. And we don't control that process. The state board would have to say yes, they would have to move forward. So the last point on that is that, you know, we're not against a statewide effort. We think there are significant differences in our region versus others. Some of that information is in our permit. Jonathan talked about it with the NADRMI and other resources that we protect. So we think even if it was a statewide permit, there would have to be some differences. But if the state board decided to move forward with that, we would be happy to engage and work on that process with them. But that's not something we would be against. We like our permit and think that it is well designed. We would certainly hope that whatever they would move towards would be something that like took the best, at least from what we've created. But it's not something that can be done in 90 days or, sorry, my voice is quavering for some reason. I'm like super nervous. That's so strange. I got to laugh at myself to make myself feel better.
Would you like some water?
What was that?
Would you like some water?
No, I'm okay. I think I just need to breathe. I haven't breathed in the last 2 minutes. I don't see how we could craft that in 90 days. An MOU also would take a long time, and I'm not sure that meets the non-point source policy, which kind of says we have to regulate it through a prohibition, a waiver, or a permit, or a WDR. I'll leave it at that, but that's where we see that effort currently.
Board members, any other discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm interested in hearing how we in Region 1 are in a position to oversee this order should the board adopt it this afternoon. I would gather that then over the course of the next number of years that we would be overseeing the implementation of this order. And so my question is, do we as a region have the staff resources to properly monitor the actions of the federal agencies?
Hello. Board Member McKenzie, this is Forrest Fortescue, your staff. I'm the senior engineering geologist of the Northern Non-Point Source and Forestry Unit, and I currently manage 7 people, 6 of which have some responsibility implementing our current permit, and we anticipate that we should have sufficient staff resources to meet the commitments that are intended through this permit.
And Mr. Chair, if I could further continue, these activities of you and your staff, are these activities conducted from a desk, or do they also involve field inspectional activities?
My unit is very focused. It's a very field-focused part of our office, and so we conduct a lot of field inspections through the year. And we intend to do a lot of our evaluation of this permit in the field, working with federal agency staff and going out and conducting our own inspections.
And in terms of compliance with such an expanded order, you would schedule field inspections with the forestry units, for example? How does that work in terms of field inspection?
Yeah, typically we, whether it's a public or a private individual that we're entity that we're inspecting, we reach out to federal agency or private staff or agency staff to schedule those inspections and provide agency staff an opportunity to join us.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm also interested in the federal resources that are available to implement such an order. And I gathered from testimony from the agencies that they feel that they do not have the resources. Now, maybe I misheard. I don't know. Do we have, from our experience and working over the last number of years, do we feel that the federal agencies with which we interact, do they have the resources to actually implement this expanded program?
Jonathan, do you want to take that?
I think what you heard today from, can you hear me?
Yes.
I think what you heard today repeatedly from different entities, both the federal agencies as well as the environmental organizations and ourselves, that there are potential resource limitations that are an obstacle that have been, you know, created through decision makings and limitations on funding by acts of Congress. And however, this permit specifically has been designed to maximize as much efficiency of the obligations upon the federal agencies to be able to leverage what resources they do have and to just set a steady stream of treating pollution sources in particular over time and setting targets to be able to continue to advance that. The reality of how flexible this permit is that it would still take a very long time horizon to actually comprehensively address the obligations that are on some of these federal landscapes. For instance, the Six Rivers National Forest that's in the audience today, they have more than 2,500 miles of roads on their national forest. The Klamath has more than 4,000 miles of road. And so that is obviously a lot of an obligation for them to take on. And yet the way that the Watershed Assessment and Recovery Program is set up is to lean in as much as 70% of the obligation towards doing treatment and fixing up roads, but also providing some alternatives based on the types of activities that they're normally doing to try and meet the compliance requirements. But even with that, we are talking many decades that it would take to actually comprehensively tackle the sources across these landscapes, especially when you're talking about the thousands of miles of road. And so we feel that we've kind of come up with a in between where we would love to see all the resources that they absolutely need made available today and see really aggressive implementation to get that done in just, you know, the next couple decades. But we have to recognize that the ability for them to acquire those funds is constrained by monies that are coming out of Congress. We are also doing our best to try and leverage dollars that we are either under control of or have access to, trying to facilitate getting grant funds and other forms of public assistance whenever mm-hmm. possible for the federal agencies to comply with those requirements. So,
yeah, one thing I am interested in, the same geographic area that we represent is the geographic area represented by the North Coast Resource Partnership. I served as chair of the North Coast Resource Partnership, and in fact, board member Sundberg and I served together in that. And that has been a source of funding for tribes as well as other entities in this geographic region. And I just wondered specifically, have we as a board had contacts with the North Coast Resource Partnership?
We certainly do have relationships and contacts with the North Coast Resource Partnership. I'm not aware of us having had specific conversations with them about the issue of funding for projects on federal lands, but we certainly do have a relationship and open lines of communication.
Yeah, well, that's certainly something I would encourage as an individual board member. As I stated in the morning, in our morning session, I was somewhat taken aback by the comments from federal representatives. But I personally believe that a vote to adopt this order is proper. And I did hear the comment about an annual report back to the board on progress in implementing what would be this new order. And I, Mr. Chair, would certainly support that. But my expectation from what I've seen so far in this board is that that's something that would happen. So
that question was on the tip of my tongue. I was going to ask you, the staff, What are the possibilities after hearing the comment requesting an update? How soon can we get an update? How soon can we realistically expect a measure of progress or adoption?
I think I'd first like to note before our staff get into the detailed answer to that, just that, you know, recognizing the importance of transparency to the board and the public, an annual update at a board meeting is a pretty labor intensive effort. And that would be the same staff that are implementing the permit with boots on the ground. And so I think as we think about frequency of updates to the board, I would just note that the effort on that could take away from the on the ground efforts of inspecting and actually implementing the permit, because it would be from within the same pool of staff. So I just wanted to kind of provide that context before our staff get more into the details of when they feel that substantive information would be available for an update.
With that in mind, would it be a year, 2 years, 3 years,
yeah,
5 years?
So the way that the federal lands permit is structured is we will receive annual updates from the federal agencies on their compliance with the watershed assessment and recovery program, as well as whatever other additional information that is available and required through the permit, including things like discharge notifications or modifications to the annual operating instructions for grazing management. With that in mind, I absolutely appreciate and agree with the executive officer about the fact that presentations like this are potentially could have implications on some of our field staff and their time away. That does not mean, though, however, we could not facilitate providing annual reports to the board that could be associated with specific board meetings, perhaps through the executive officer's reporting structure that we normally do and that you see regularly. Those are very much more manageable, but then with the intention that periodically coming and presenting to the board, we absolutely be happy to do that. But I do appreciate and recognize, and we feel the weight of doing board presentations is a big effort.
Sure. To facilitate a reporting, a summarizing of conditions back to the public, I think an EO report would be sufficient if it's published and available to the public.
Can I add in, Board Chair Bedoya? I just wanted to note that I think you were asking also about like when we might have information that's useful, right? And so I'll just there's kind of two pieces to that question that I see. One is the process of how the permit is functioning. Is it functioning well? Is our engagement working with the feds? Or are they struggling in some ways that we can help them? Like that's one question. And then the other is like, is the permit doing what we think it should be doing? Is it protecting water quality? Is it ensuring that that the feds are following their guidance? Are our staff able to get out there and ensure that work is being done? And so the first part, I think, could be answered more sooner, right? Because we'll know after the first year of annual reports, like how that's going and what's failing. We'll know with our engagement with federal partners how it's working. We probably would know even more after 2 years, you know, or so. But knowing how well water quality protection is happening, I think is really likely to see further down, 2, 3, 4 years down. We have a 5-year report built in from the feds on all of the things that have happened in the last 5 years. So I just wanted to be clear that I think it's we have a habit of accidentally promising to say like how good water quality is going to be 2 years from now, which is never, we can't measure that. It's just really difficult. So I just wanted to be clear that I think we can give information on the process and procedures, but probably it's taking quite a bit longer to know whether actual water quality improvements are happening on the ground. I mean, we would know site by site, but when you're looking at watersheds, sometimes that takes 10, 20, 30 years to know. So I just wanted to be clear about the differences.
Mr. Chair, I think that's a very cogent answer. I was once involved working with the state of Wisconsin on implementation of pesticide regulations to corn, and did in fact the execution of the regulation come up with results. In other words, reduction of atrazine contamination of groundwater. And to me, it's very important you're imposing a regulatory requirement to follow up and see if, in fact, what you intended in the regulation is actually coming about. And I think your response to the question was very proper, and it takes time, obviously. But on the shorter term, the annual term, I think also just, are the agencies actually starting to execute the program? So thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it.
Chair Bedoya? Oh, I'm sorry, did I interrupt?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I wanted to also identify two subtleties. One of the things built in intentionally into the compliance with the Watershed Assessment and Recovery Program is that it'll be based on a 5-year rolling average, recognizing that during certain years, there may be times of less funding that is acquired to do some of the work, and then there's going to be periods where maybe they actually exceed that number. And so this first 5 years is going to be a nuanced kind of, we're adapting to a new process, a new program, new reporting requirements. So I just wanted to be plain about that the first 5 years are a bit of a subtlety.
Oh, absolutely. And looking at the November elections, who knows what's going to happen?
Agreed. Another thing that I want to honor that the Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management in particular have been participating in and conducting for more than 20 years, which Bill Wall from the Klamath National Forest actually represented a bit, is that aquatic riparian and effectiveness monitoring program. This is a large ongoing monitoring program that's been going on for several decades, and it has a lot of value to it. It identifies both all three biological, physical, and chemical conditions of the water bodies that they've been studying. In our region alone, there's 41 different six field watersheds that have been studied pretty intensively over that period. They do an 8-year rotation of re-entering these areas and identifying whether conditions are moving in one trajectory or another. And Bill spoke to that. And so I just want to recognize that that's an important part that we are leaning in, and we are recognizing it's having a lot of value for our purposes, because in the North Coast, we have all these sensitive, you know, watersheds that, like we were talking about, we have all these impairments, we have TMDLs. And so just wanted to recognize and appreciate the work that is ongoing. And we actually were invited to go out several weeks ago out in the Scott River watershed and to meet with their team and see what their training protocols are for their staff and how they collect the information, answer a bunch of questions for us. And they do this work every year across multiple states. And so just want to give kudos to the value of that also, because I feel like we want you to understand that is part of the process already.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Jonathan, somewhat piggybacking off of that comment and some of the concerns expressed during public comment period, is our historic projects or historic work that has been done, is that going to be taken into consideration? Like if we were to adopt this permit here today, I mean, moving forward with projects, do you take into account all the work that has been done, or are all the conditions as of today, is that the baseline and there's no consideration for past or ongoing current projects? Do you understand my question?
Absolutely.
Okay.
There is a lot of work that has been done over the years by the different administrative units. We absolutely recognize that that is the case. And at the same time, we recognize that on some of these administrative units, there is a tremendous amount of more work to do. So the way the WARP was structured was if a certain amount of treatment of controllable sediment discharge sources has been completed within one of those six field watersheds, after they've completed 75% of the known CSDS, then that WARP credit obligation would be reduced. So that's already built into the process. It does provide an opportunity for looking back and seeing what has been done. And that's just something that we will be partnering with the federal agencies in addressing. Additionally, the WARP is constructed around the process of potentially future delisting of water bodies, because that is our goal, right? Mm-hmm. We have impaired water bodies all over the North Coast. And there is a process that the State Water Board has for us to be able to, well, for the federal agencies or land ownerships to be able to identify whether water quality conditions are improving and some of those impairments can be removed. The WARP is already built in and has infrastructure for once water bodies are delisted, the WARP obligation in that six field watershed will also be reduced. So it's backward looking of seeing what has been accomplished. It's forward looking for us delisting water bodies down the road.
Okay, thank you. And more, this is on a kind of a specific element that was brought up during public comment period. The whole issue surrounding the interpretation of who would be held liable, I believe it was page 15, that I could be mistaken, regarding, you know, if there's a impact to water quality, who's held liable, the lessee or the lessor, or, you know, could, I guess this is more to staff, maybe whoever this, I don't know who this question is going to, it's going to somebody here. Could we have that portion sort of clarified or reworked the wording to make it a little more clear for the public and the board what would happen, or I don't know what would be needed there, because it seems like there's ambiguity there that really leaves a big door open.
I mean, I think to some degree there is a door open because the regional board has existing authorities outside of this proposed permit, and adopting the permit doesn't change the ability for the regional board to conduct, if there are violations of the water code by any individual, the regional board has the authority to take enforcement action. And so to some degree, I think that, you know, regarding that, the sentence or two on page 15, that's not a door that the permit can close, because it's an existing authority that the regional board has that is has some overlap with this permit, but is broader than this permit.
So would it be beneficial, though, to at least basically summarize what you just said, just kind of, I don't know if it would be redundant or not, to make sure in the permit saying, hey, the water board still has this authority, you know.
Are you asking to modify the text?
Yeah.
And expand on that point?
Yes, that exactly what you just said, Valerie, clear, like that's very clear, but it didn't seem to be clear to public on that point. And that's what I mean by being ambiguous. Like, how does one interpret the way it's written right now?
This board over the years has tried to change verbiage on the fly, and I've consistently opposed that. When you have verbiage that has been worked on for, in this case, years, and to try and wordsmith it at the last minute often takes more time than you can imagine, and often leads to more confusion, because people are, they know what that line says on 15, and if they have a question, they can always call Valerie and she can give them that. So I would ask that we not consider jumping in and changing words at this time, especially if it's something that can be cleared with a phone call. If, you know, if it was something foundational, I probably wouldn't support it, but I might roll over on it. But I think what Valerie said, you know, can be cleared up with a phone call, I'd ask you to consider that.
I have to agree.
Okay.
Thank you, Valerie.
Mr. Chair, may I?
Sure.
Thank you. I can't express my gratitude to staff enough for the thoroughness, thoughtfulness, and professionalism that you put into this order and this presentation. You guys really hit a home run, and it's much appreciated. Thank you. I also have been somebody who's worked, you know, with the multiple use doctrine my entire career as I've interacted with federal agencies at various levels. And I'm not opposed to the multiple use doctrine, but we have to be honest in that the exploitive aspects of resources under multiple use, whether it's grazing or timber or mining, have, I think I can make a good argument, have taken top tier preferential treatment. I think it's time to recognize, especially in our region, when we're dealing with anadromy, I think it's important to recognize that there are other forest products that we've got to give equal consideration to. Salmon, steelhead, lamprey, eulachon, sturgeon are all products of the forest. They're forest products. Clean water is a product of the forest. We have to at least recognize that these other resources have equal value to these other components of the multiple use doctrine. I think this document goes a long way in starting to elevate those other products to an even tier. I like what you've done in that simply saying, taking the existing rules that have been on the books for federal lands and the use of BMPs that have been there for years, we're going to try and hold their feet to the fire. I accept and recognize that the concerns we've heard from high-level agency people phoning in this morning, I accept and recognize the challenge of being understaffed and underfunded. To be blunt, that's their problem, not ours. Our problem is we've had fishing communities that haven't been able to work for the past 2 years. Communities from Bodega to Crescent City have been ruined, if you will, because of the fact that forest resources, fish, and clean water have been impaired. That's my top priority, the folks that I live with, not some agency bureaucratic challenge. That's, as I said, that's somebody else's problem. I'm hoping that by going forward, that this can provide leverage to agency managers to go up their food chain and say, California's holding our feet to the fire. We need more resources to do the job. And that's the way I played the administrative game when I had to try and get more resources out of the University of California. Board Member McKenzie, you're always going to have my no vote if you think I'm going to vote for spending state money for a federal problem. That's not going to happen, because I think our precious resources have to stay here. And I think the federal government is responsible for their own issues. So I want to say that I wholeheartedly support this document as it's written. I think the 90-day pause, as we've been told, is a red herring. It's not going to do anything. I think as another speaker, Mr. Diaz, said, we're the point of the spear. I like California, our region, being the point of the spear. I'm hoping that people will use this as an example for these other regions. I don't have a problem with a statewide approach if and when the state board wants to do that. I hope that they'll take the components of this and make it into a draft. But recognizing that anadromy is not an issue in the Sierra forest because all those forests are behind dams and the fish can't get to them. So I think there's a lot of good to be said here. I have some bias against the statewide program using our cannabis program that was working very well. It became a statewide program. It's not working as well for us. So I believe in our staff's intention. I believe in our staff's professionalism, and I'm going to support this as it is 100%. Thank you.
Board members, any other questions or discussion?
I guess I hadn't realized that I was advocating for the use of state money to save federal programs. Let me just say that there's a representative in Congress who represents this this geographic area, Congressman Huffman, and I believe that in this process that I'm not sure yet how we engage with our congressional representatives through this board, but it would seem to me that we should be certain that our congressman here hears of our deliberations today, and I'm wholeheartedly in favor of this resolution or these resolutions.
I don't think I said it today, but I really want to commend staff for all their hard work on this. This is a beast of a document, and there's probably a lot of contention, and you guys have captured nuance in a lot of this, I believe, and there's going to be growing pains for everybody. And I think that's a healthy thing, because we're here today to ensure water quality, and we're the state to lead and show that we can successfully integrate all these different communities and resources and economies and still maintain the high quality water quality standards. And again, thank you for your work. I agree with much of what Greg, Vice Chair Greg Gusty, laid out. And so thank you.
Right. Okay, thank you very much. With that, I would entertain a motion to approve proposed resolution number R1-2024-0032, certification of environmental impact report on proposed order.
I'll make that motion, Mr. Chair.
Your second.
I'll second.
Deirdre?
Chair Bedoya?
Aye.
Vice Chair Giusti?
Aye.
Board Member Hart?
Aye.
Board Member Sundberg?
Aye.
Board Member McKenzie?
Aye.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Before you entertain a motion on the order itself, I wanted to suggest that the maker of that motion consider including the change sheet as part of the motion for the what would be included in adopted order.
Yep, I would be agreeable to including that.
Second.
Thank you. We call for another vote.
To clarify, was that a motion from Board Member McKenzie to adopt the order, including the change sheet, and a second from Board Member Hart on that motion?
That was absolutely my intention, Madam Executive Officer. So moved.
So second.
Aye.
Okay. That was Chair Bedoya, Vice Chair Giusti?
Yes.
Board Member Hart?
Aye.
Board Member Sundberg?
Aye.
Board Member McKenzie?
Aye.
Thank you, Valerie, for bringing that up. Now.
EIR?
Yes, that's where we're going. No, that we did that. So I will entertain a motion for the order number R1-2024-0012, waste discharge requirements for federal lands in the North Coast region.
So moved.
Second.
Chair Bedoya, I think there's some confusion in that the change sheet needs to be included in the order, the WDR that you just proposed, correct? Not the EIR certification, which was the first
vote was for the EIR.
The first vote was for the EIR. I understood the second vote to be for the order, including the change sheet.
I think you jumped the gun there, but let's Let's do this again.
We can do it again to make sure the record is very clear.
I think we have the certification for the EAR
yes.
locked in, because that doesn't need the change sheet. So what we need now is
entertain a motion on order number R1-2024-0012, waste discharge, general waste discharge requirements for federal lands in the North Coast region, to include the amended letter, the change sheet.
Mr. Chair, I move to accept R1-2024-0012 with the attached change sheet.
Second.
Chair Bedoya.
Aye.
Vice Chair Giusti.
I see that old thing, you know, vote early, vote often. Yes.
Board Member Hart.
Yes.
Board Member Sundberg.
Aye.
Board Member McKenzie.
Aye.
Okay, folks, with that, thank you so much for participating. Thank you, staff, for your hard work, your diligence, and motion meeting is over. Thank you.